All right, Madam Chair, we are ready to go and the meeting is yours.
Wonderful, thank you. Good morning, my name is Virginia Madueño. I am the chair for the California Boating and Waterways Commission, and I will be chairing the Boating and Waterways Commission meeting today. I call to order the August 13, 2020 commission meeting. This meeting is being held virtually on Zoom. As a reminder to everyone, this meeting is live webcast and can be viewed at www.cal-span.org. The archive video will also be available at the calspan.org website. Before we get started with the reports on today's agenda, I'm going to just ask for you to just stay where you are and please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. And I've got a flag right here. Ready.
Good job.
And we'll start now. I pledge allegiance,
To
the flag.
To the flag.
The United States of America.
States of America.
To the Republic.
To the Republic. For which it stands.
One nation.
Under God.
Indivisible.
Liberty and justice
for all. Might I say I really like that technical aspect that we have at our disposal. Thank you so much, Bob, for that. Next, I'd like to ask Megan Russell to take roll call for the commission, please.
Yes, will do. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Perfect.
Yes. Perfect, okay. All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. All right. So we have Madam Chair Madueño of Riverbank, California.
Present.
Vice Chair Pettibone of Sacramento, California.
Present.
Commissioner Kenneth Ehrman of Oxnard, California.
Present.
Commissioner Tom Pierre of San Francisco, California.
Present.
And Commissioner Hawkins of Truckee, California.
Present.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Megan. At this time, I would like to formally welcome our two newest commissioners, and that would be Tom Pierre, who just got appointed, and he is from the San Francisco, California area, and Catherine Hawkins, who is now joining us from Truckee, California. I want to first and foremost welcome both of you and tell you what an honor it is to have you join us on this amazing commission that I've had the pleasure of serving on now for, gosh, 6+ years. So welcome. I'd also like to read a short bio that was provided to me on both of them. Incredible credentials and what an amazing background for both of you. And so we're very fortunate to have you join us on this commission. We'll start with Tom. Tom Pierre has been with the counsel of Alioto Law Firm since 2005. He was a self-employed political consultant from 1991 to 1999. A lifeguard for the city of Newport Beach from 88 to 92. We're not dating you, Tom. Trust me, we're not. And a fisherman and ship engineer for various shipping vessels from 85 to 88. Tom earned his Juris Doctorate degree from the University of San Francisco Law School and a Master's of Art degree in journalism from the University of Texas in Austin. Tom, again, a pleasure and welcome.
Well, thank you so much. It's a pleasure being here. I'm honored to serve on this commission, and I look forward to working with all of you in the coming years. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tom. A pleasure. And let me say, you have by far the most beautiful background on this Zoom meeting. So great. Next, we'll go to, I have it as Catherine Hawkins, but it's listed as Katie Hawkins. Do you prefer Katie?
Yes. Thank you.
Excellent. So Katie, welcome. Let me give you a little background on Katie. Katie is a global sales director for the outdoor industry with almost 20 years of experience. Katie Hawkins has led international sales team and growth initiatives for key outdoor brands such as Marmot, Black Diamond Equipment, and Gregory Mountain Products. Katie currently spearheads the advocacy and policy efforts for Outdoor Alliance in California. Katie has earned her MBA from CSU Sacramento and currently serves on the board of the Pacific Crest Trail Association. Katie, again, welcome and a pleasure to have you on this commission.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just echo the comments of Commissioner Pierre. I'm just thrilled to be here and excited to help support this commission. So honored and thank you.
Thank you so very much. At this time, I would like to introduce any local dignitaries, if there are any. I do see that we have Marivelle, but let me wait on Marivelle. We also have, of course, our astute interim deputy director, and that's Ms. Ramona Fernandez. We have our legal counsel, Catherine Tobias. And, of course, representing the State Parks Office, we have Ms. Maribel Barajas, who I have just an affinity of passion for since we've grown up together. How about that?
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the two new commissioners.
Great. Thank you. Please, Megan, I'm going to ask you, if I'm missing anybody, send me a quick text, and I can definitely do my due diligence and introduce the others. I also want to introduce Will. I always do this wrong, Will, and I'm so sorry, but Will is Will Schaffsma, and he's the Deputy Director for Admin Services Division for Parks. Welcome, Will.
Thank you, and you got it right, as always.
Excellent. Thank you. Okay, well, we're going to go right into my report, and I'm going to make it brief. And Megan, if you give me the thumbs up that video will be shown, I'm just going to give a quick intro first, if that's okay.
Okay.
We're all set on this end for the video.
Wonderful. Well, it's our first Zoom meeting as a commission, and clearly this is a different environment for all of us and that we're working in. And what I have seen over the past 5-6 months is that our rivers, our waterways are being more congested with people wanting to get outdoors, to do the whole social distancing part, if you will. And so our rivers, our waterways are going to continue to see a steady stream of activity. We're going to see a lot more use, which makes me incredibly happy. But we're also going to see some challenges. On July 4th, I took the initiative and walked down to the river. I literally live 2 blocks away from the Stanislaus River. And I've been seeing a lot of activity in my neck of the woods in terms of increased activity. We've seen neighborhoods congested with cars because, again, our standard protocol at the public access point, there's just too much activity, too much cars, too many people. And so they're restricting the public use. So people want to cool off. They want to take advantage of their gem in their backyard. So I went out and I interviewed. I wanted to find out, where did these people come from? Were they local? Why were they not using the public access point? Is it because of, again, the cost, because there is a charge, there is a daily fee, or is it just because they couldn't access it because, again, restrictions on this pandemic and limiting the number of people? And I was just, taken aback by seeing how many people were wanting to flock to the local rivers, but more importantly, how people were making their own access point. And so I wanted to show this quick video that I shot with my iPhone. So Bob, if you would, please.
So today is 4th of July, and I'm here at the Stanislaus River. Actually, we are on the other side of the public access point to Jacob Myers Park. And as you can see, there are tons of kids, adults, just enjoying a nice hot summer day. There's no infrastructure here. It's kind of a makeshift, make-do access point. Families gathered. Again, community has just made its own place to come together. There's no park benches, there's no restrooms, but the people are enjoying, again, the river as they should. You can see that I access this point right from up there. Almost fell down because there's nothing in terms of steps or anything to be able to safely guide you down here. But it's great to see families enjoying the Stanislaus River, kids enjoying their time in the river,
But no life jackets out here, which is a little concerning as well.
So, and by the way, I did not add that music. That was music that was being played. So I'm not that technically advanced. But a couple of things. I did call the city manager here in Riverbank, California, to let him know it was great to see how many people were accessing the river. But a couple of things that really kind of concerned me. And that was because there is so much activity at the neighborhood level, there's obviously a lot of activity on lawns that people don't want. And two, there's what I'm considering some compromises to our levee because people are trampling literally over the levee system. And so that concerns me from an infrastructure perspective as well. The fact that there are no restrooms, also very concerning to me from a health and public safety aspect. So I shared that with our state parks director. I shared it with our deputy director, Ramona, and said, you know, these are the types of activities, these are the types of infrastructure that I see us as commissioners, again, playing more offense with. We have to do some, I guess, some mitigation, if you will, with some of these. The other part that kind of concerned me is that if we are charging, and if, again, during these very difficult economic times, if people can't afford that fee to get in, which I believe is $7 or $8 now to get into the park, that's also very concerning considering we are providing the grants for some of these parks. And if we're charging and we're not allowing people to use their river, their park, because of the cost of a day use and they can't afford it, that's very concerning to me as well. So I will leave it at that, and we will go on to the rest of my peers and ask for your updates if you have one. And we'll start with Commissioner Tom Irwin. Irwin. I said Irwin. I'm so sorry. Oh, we can't hear you, Commissioner Irwin.
That's, you think I've done this before. Since our last meeting, we've had some downtime. So I actually went out. I went out to the Fred Hull Boat Show in Long Beach and went out there. I wanted to interact with the Boating and Waterways booth to see what they were doing. And a lot of the constituents and our shareholders were out there. But I got to speak to the Boating and Waterways booth, and it was really encouraging. They had a lot of traffic, and they were giving out a lot of our materials. There was a lot of people seemed to be interested in the boating card information. So I thought that was encouraging, and I went around to the different booths. I met with the park rangers and the game wardens, and they were both seemed to be having a lot of interest in the boating card information as well. So I thought that was encouraging. I actually got on and I attended the 8-hour boating and safety course from the Coast Guard to get my boating card. And I actually had to do that through Zoom. And it was one of the first times they'd done it through Zoom. And I thought it was really well done. I thought it was really encouraging in providing people the information, even these times, to be able to safely boat and get their boating card. I thought it was really well done. And then after that, I actually, I started participating in the Coast Guard Auxiliary here in Ventura. I wanted to get more involved in the search and rescue efforts and teaching boating safety. So I will actually become a member of our flotilla here in Oxnard with the Coast Guard Auxiliary, so I can provide more kind of hands-on training and stuff for boating and safety.
Excellent. Thank you for that report. Next, we will go with Ms. Katie Pettibone.
Thank you very much. It's been interesting to see how here in the Sacramento region, how much our waterways are getting used. It's similar to what Commissioner Medueno saw. The public is flocking and enjoying it. There's lots of boating. Of course, the news came down locally that Lake Folsom's going to be closing early because of water levels, which is obviously really difficult because it's very warm here and people want to be using the water. I've been actually similarly going to the Sacramento River, which is right close to where I live, and enjoying the banks. There's some wonderful shallow banks and taking our dogs down there to cool off, and that's been super fun. Sacramento region, I think some of the other urban areas in the state are challenged with trash and certainly displaced people who are making their homes along the banks. And so there's a lot of debris, which is a shame because obviously that's getting into the waterways and affects the animals and certainly the use. So that's something that hopefully this region will continue to work on. But it is really exciting to see the use and attention and desire to be on the water, especially people can't go and to gyms or things like that. And so, you know, talking to local boating industry reps, you know, they're saying sales are through the roof. There's actually waiting lists to get boats, and that's great because that means that our folks are getting out there and enjoying what we have to offer in the state.
That's great. Thank you so much. And I couldn't agree more. Yeah, we're seeing the increase in camper travel trailers, boats. So the outdoors is really going to be the go-to, if you will, location for the time being. Thank you again to our vice chair, Ms. Pettibone. I'm going to offer Tom and Katie also an opportunity. I know that you don't have maybe an update, but any other additional comments or thoughts?
Katie, do you want to go ahead?
Yeah, thank you. Just to echo the comments of the other commissioners and you, Madam Chair, here up in Donner Lake, Lake Tahoe, we're seeing definite impacts to the land. It's impacts, whether it's littering, excessive, people are not social distancing, and on our public piers and waterways here. And so I've been part of some stewardship groups doing litter removal, pickup on a weekly basis. It's not good right now. And then last week we had a fatality on Lake Tahoe. So again, there's a lot of things going on right now, but there are people that are doing great work within the community here to help the land managers to promote safety, social distancing, as well as, pack it in, pack it out, and recreate responsibly. So I'm actively involved here in our area.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much. Appreciate that. Tom?
Well, I'll just give a perspective from the San Francisco Bay. So I'm a swimmer. I've been a member of the South End Rowing Club. Right there on Aquatic Park, if you're familiar with it. I've been a member there for 25 years, and I've been enjoying swimming in the bay for that long. And so the club has, of course, been closed, that and our neighboring club, a sister club, the Dolphin Club. And what is interesting is in addition to two club closures, all of the public pools in San Francisco have been closed. And so there's this tremendous community now of swimmers, and I don't know if any of you are swimmers, but it's almost an addiction. You just have to get in the water, and you have to do it. So there's this incredible community of swimmers now that have congregated on the aquatic park, the bleachers there, and just on the beach generally. And in my 25 years, I've never seen so much activity in aquatic park. Now, of course, that's federal land, but I will just point out that there's also really no public facilities there. And a lot of families come down with young children. There's no bathrooms. There's really, it's all managed by the Federal Park Service. I guess my observation, and it wouldn't be an update because I've never done it before, so I can't update myself, would just be simply, and to reflect the comments of other commissioners, is really how much people are being drawn to the water now in a way I've never seen before. And so, I occasionally bring my boat up to the Delta just for fun. And I'm actually looking forward to doing that in the coming months just to sort of get a better sense of what's going on up there as well. Thank you so much.
No, thank you, Commissioner. Really appreciate all your insights. And again, to all of you, we appreciate your time and your commitment in serving on this Boating and Waterways Commission. I think our status has just been elevated with this pandemic. We will now move on to our Deputy Director's report, and that will be our distinguished Acting Deputy Director, Ramona Fernandez, and she will present the division updates. Ms. Fernandez.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Can I get my video playing, please? PowerPoint?
Yes. So, Bob.
Oh, you fooled me. You fooled me with the power, with a video thing. Hold on one second. I was like, PowerPoint. I'm on the wrong thing. Oh, no. Hold on one second. Here it comes.
PowerPoint number one. Five. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. So good morning, everyone. And thank you, commissioners. It's been interesting hearing all of your stories on everyone now with COVID reaching out and trying to get out in the water and recreating. And we've been hearing that same from a lot of our law enforcement, local law enforcement, and industry as well, conversations I've had with them. So yes, it's definitely increased boating activity if there's anything good about this COVID-19. So good morning again. Since our last commission meeting, the division obviously had to change course on how we conducted business. COVID-19 was and is still upon us. Next slide, please. By the end of March, the majority of our staff were working from home. We still continue to maintain a very, very small amount of staff in the office. However, our offices were closed to the public. Our field operation, our aquatic invasive plant control program that's in the Delta, did have a late start, but in coordination with our state and local public health departments, we were able to establish new safety protocols, implement them, and get crews started to start treatment in the Delta. Our program managers and staff were quickly changing, you know, courses and creating YouTube videos for virtual workshops for all of our grant programs. Our boating education and outreach and our clean and green managers and staff were extremely creative in developing virtual platforms, which you'll hear about later on in the meeting. We're also successful in continuing our services in many of our programs, you know, despite the shelter-in-place executive order. But like with everything else, we were also challenged and had to cancel or postpone some of our services and programs. And you'll hear from those program during program updates on those as well. Next slide, please. So some administrative updates since our last commission meeting. We have had during this time a lot of staff turnover. We've had many retirements this year and also several staff transfers. We are working on backfilling several critical positions. We also have redirected 6 staff to assist with the state's effort on contact tracing. You know, as you all know, this is in a very important role. They're serving for California. And so at this time, I would like to thank each one of them for their commitment to fulfilling this assignment. And not only that, but also the managers and other staff that are continuing here for stepping up to ensure that our services continued. In regards to some of our regulation processes and rulemaking, we have implemented regulations for the boater card portion that identifies the vessel operator's education and certification card. And again, you'll hear more about that on program updates. We also have promulgated the decoupling of the registration and the purchase of the Quagga-Zebra muscle sticker in regulations. We're working with DMV to actually make that happen. And we continue to work on yacht and ship licensing and for hire and our safe, surrendered and abandoned vessel and exchange grant program regulations. As mentioned at our last commission meeting, our boating facility needs assessment report is still under review through executive and agency level. The California Boating and Waterways Commission triennial report, the second report, is in draft and it is under review. And we hope to have a pre-final draft to be shared with the commission soon. So I'll keep you updated on that effort. As previously mentioned at our last commission meeting, as many of you were aware, the boating safety unit that was originally transferred to the Law Enforcement and Emergency Services Division during the department's reorganization initiative has been transferred back to the Division of Boating and Waterways effective July 1. And so part of that, as we went through the transformation effort, and in the engagement meetings that you heard, that you were either part of or heard from our executive office on, as you know, nothing would be, you know, kind of set in stone. We'd be looking at programs on efficiencies and to ensure that they are, you know, that we still maintain relevancy in where these programs were being transferred to within the department. And over the last year or so on these particular programs in boating safety, there wasn't really a true benefit. And so we started looking at the programs and I was working closely with executive team on is this truly where these programs need to stay? So after, you know, many meetings and discussions on it, they truly did belong back in Boating and Waterways and the benefit there. So the programs, as I mentioned, the Boating Safety Unit, which you'll hear about on those program updates, are now back and part of the Division of Boating and Waterways. However, that being said, the Boating Education and Outreach, our Clean and Green program, you know, definitely there has been proven to have significant benefits with the transition of those to our interpretation and education division. Also the multimedia campaign program to the communication and marketing division has truly been a benefit, it going to the larger division under the deputy director of Gloria Sandoval. Another success has been our oceanography program to our natural resource division. Next slide, please. In terms of our, there's not a graph on there. I apologize. Was there another slide, Megan? Oh, I'll continue to walk through this. So, in comparison,
no, I'm sorry, ma'am. I'm sorry, ma'am. I don't see a graph on this. I apologize.
Okay. Yep. There must have been the wrong PowerPoint that was updated. So I'll just walk through this and I'll ensure that we get the graph that was identified here from a comparison from last fiscal year to the 2021 budget, governor's budget. So in comparison, there was some slight increase due to salary and benefit due to raises and adjustments. Also, keeping in mind that the governor, there is a furlough order, so there'll be roughly a 5% savings in salary. In comparison from last fiscal year, and I do apologize, I don't have these numbers in front of me, there has been they're unchanged from previous governor's budget to current budget. And as many of you are aware, our grant cycle is application based. And historically, we have never used all of our appropriation on our grant program. Capital outlay projects this year, there will be no new projects for the 2021 fiscal year. And just a quick update on the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund imbalance since our last meeting. We received higher revenues and had additional savings once we closed, once the department was able to close the financial books for fiscal year 17, 18, and 18 and 19. These savings and adjustments provided the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund with a supportable balance for our current fiscal year 2021, therefore leaving us additional time for to come up with a sustainable solution. We are currently closing our fiscal year 2018 and 2019, as well as 2019 and 20 books. So upon conclusion of this effort, we'll do further analysis and we'll be completing, we'll be completed in order to assess future balances and the health of this fund. We'll also to continue to work with the Department of Finance on a balanced solution that will be considered in the new with this new financial information. As many of you are aware, with COVID-19 pandemic, revenues across the state have seen a significant decrease. Therefore, all special funds, which includes the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund, will see a 5% reduction in appropriations beginning in 2021-2022. Moreover, in addition to helping achieve these savings, state employees are participating in a personal leave program, which we call PLP, where employees are credited with 16 hours per month in exchange for a pay reduction of roughly 9.23%. The PLP program will not count towards our 5% allocation reduction. And next slide. Again, I do apologize. I'll ensure to get these updated and on our website and to all of you commissioners on the budget graph. Madam Chair, this completes my presentation for department division update.
Madam Chair, you're on mute.
You're on mute.
Thank you. To our Deputy Director, Ramona, thank you so much for that update. What I was saying is, if you could please provide us with copies of those slides, if we can get those so that we can actually, again, follow along with what is happening. And I also want to comment so that that 5% reduction, that starts next year, correct? Next fiscal year?
That is correct. Yes. Yes.
So the impacts in terms of the pandemic, we're not going to see until next year, which will give us some additional time to plan ahead. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
Okay. Commissioners, I'd like to open it up to you to ask any questions, and we'll start with our Vice Chair, Ms. Pettibone.
Yeah, I'm sorry, because probably a chart would maybe help with my questions. I just wondered if you could go into, I was struggling to understand. So closing the books, helping with the fiscal, how does that help? Because is that meaning that some of the loans are done and don't the repayments help with our fiscal? And so just if you could explain that a little bit more, that'd be helpful.
Yes. Yes. So, so after the closing of the books 17, 18 and 18, 19, it was comparing the actual, so our appropriation versus our actual. So what we spent wasn't as anticipated. It was a lot less than what we had anticipated on the appropriation of that of the budget. So there was, I can give you a few numbers. So overall, the savings, 17-18 actuals, and our estimated 17-18 actuals. There was an approximately $16 million savings there. Also, let's see, expenditures. Also, the galley of the budget also showed expenditures at appropriation level, as I mentioned, and it did not show prior year adjustments. So those prior year adjustments would be, you know, whether we didn't grant out all of our funding for the appropriation for local assistance and other year-end adjustments. So those weren't included as well. And some of the major changes also was there was approximately 3.8 million expenditure savings. The revenue was slightly up by about 500,000. And again, the biggest change was the prior year adjustment of the 12.2. So I'm going to kind of refer to Will for a little bit on that.
Sure. Thanks, Ramona. Everything you said was accurate. I just wanted to add there was additional motor vehicle fuel account transfers that were not realized at the time. So in 1920, we had an estimate of 7.9. That's now looking like 11 million. And in 21, an increase of 2.8 million. I think I'm saying that right. Anyways, the fuel tax, and we can get you specific details on this.
Yes.
But the fuel tax revenues were higher than estimated. It was also a big component of that fund balance increase. So because largely due to fiscal, we've had some issues closing our books timely. And this is pretty typical in state government. When we close our books, we'll typically realize some additional revenues, some additional savings, and those aren't recorded until the books are closed. So in this case, it was all to the benefit of the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund. So all of the components combined, the kind of the aggregate effect of closing the books on both sides of the ledger has put us in a position where we can delay having to come up with a sustainable solution for one additional year. We do have a meeting with Department of Finance this week to go ahead and start reviewing those new numbers and trying to understand what that means for Harbors and Watercraft going forward. As Ramona mentioned, there's also the 21-22 5% reduction to expenditures. That will also help out in the sustainable solution for the Harbors and Watercraft reduction or revolving fund. But I'll also note that for the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund, one of its main revenue sources is from the motor vehicle fuel account. And that money is derived on a formula that is based on the number of registered boats, which is different than the way they do it for, say, an OHV. So to the extent that number of registered boats stays the same, the impact would not be noticeable in that fuel account transfer. So we could end up in a situation where the number of registered boats stays somewhat static, at least for now. We end up with the same amount of fuel tax revenue. However, we're taking a 5% reduction in 21-22. So that's going to net us out in the positive for solving this thing. I think the other, you know, the registration numbers, those are tied in as well. So hopefully we see those numbers continue to remain steady. The 5% will help us solve the fund. And now we've got some additional wiggle room given the, you know, the new closing numbers that we've recently realized. And we hope to come back to the commission soon and be updating folks on what everything looks like. Ramona, I think, was just updating based on the most recent closing information that we have. But we'll be coming back to the commission soon with updates as we have them.
That's super helpful. I liked your point. I thought that was important about the formula with registered, because I was thinking with the amount of use of going on the water, the fuel tax should be helping. But if the formula is more about registered and there's a lag in that, that certainly will affect that. So that's helpful. Thank you.
Will, what's your projected timeline in terms of meeting with the Department of Finance and tallying, if you will, these new projections? What would you foresee as a timeline, a realistic timeline to get back to us in terms of where we're heading with this next budget?
So we'll be meeting with them to discuss all of the actual information on revenues and expenditures this week. That will drive some discussion on what a sustainable solution is going to look like for the fund. Because that would be released in the Jan 10 governor's budget, it's not public until then, but we will be able to discuss what we are looking at in terms of the financial numbers and some of the drivers of that conversation with the commission. I don't think we'll be privy to release what that solution looks like until the Jan 10 budget, at least on a public level. But I think we will try to share as much information as we can without getting out in front of the governor's budget on that. Certainly we'll be able to discuss what we're seeing as far as expenditure trends, revenue trends, those type of knowable factors and drivers.
Great. Thank you. Much appreciated. Any other questions of our acting deputy director, Ramona Fernandez, or Will?
Okay. I have a quick question. Ramona, you mentioned the boating safety unit reverting back to boating on waterways in July. Is that what you said, correct?
Yes, correct. Am I on you?
Yeah, no, you're on. Yes. So does that, is that like an actual tangible unit? Like, do you get position numbers and funding reverting back to you? Is there just extra responsibility? Yeah.
No, actually, there was positions and funding as well. So during the reorganization of the department, some of our programs and positions, as well as the funding that went along with that, were transferred department-wide through that effort. And so, and that was about 2 years ago, about approximately 2 years ago. And so, you know, through review, the program, positions, program, and funding of those programs came back to boating and waterways.
Excellent. Great. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
Well, Tom Peer here. I'm sorry. Thank you, Madam.
Yes.
If someone could just, Will or Ramona, just actually, I haven't seen any of these budget proposals or what have you. If someone could just, I don't know what the proper venue for that is to have that sent to me, but I have not seen anything that we're now discussing, and I would appreciate being copied on whatever is going around. If it's publicly accessible, just direct me if you could to where I could obtain that.
Definitely. We can do that. Right now there's no formal proposal to have a sustainable solution for harbors and watercraft. So there's nothing there. That vehicle would be called a budget change proposal. Those would typically go on Department of Finance's website and be public information. What we do have that's public right now are fund condition statements, and those are available on eBudget, and we can definitely share those and forward those to the commissioners. And what you can see in the fund condition statement, in the last published fund condition statement on DOF's website, is a dwindling fund balance for the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund. We had a couple commission meetings last year that discussed how we got to that point and some of the factors that we saw contributing to what we call an operational deficit in the fund, where expenditures are outpacing revenues. So we've got some old commission slides that might be helpful to share here. And fund condition statements, which we can also share, which would kind of describe the problem that we're looking at. However, there's no formal proposal to fix it yet. That's what we're currently working on. And I think the consensus is there would likely be a solution in the Jan 10 budget or in some budget release for the upcoming fiscal year. But at this point, I don't, you're not missing out on a big proposal that's being discussed yet.
No, understood. Just I'd love whatever background you can provide so I can get up to speed on all of this. Yeah. Sure. Past Absolutely. Budgets, whatever it is, so I can get a, you know, like I say, educate myself so I understand what's going on.
Sure, so, we'll package something up for you.
That would be great. Thank you.
Yep.
And I'm just going to suggest to both our newest commissioners and I'm sure, Ramona, you've already done this, but having that one-on-one meeting, if you haven't had so already, just to kind of bring you up to speed, I think would be incredibly important and invaluable moving forward. So hopefully you guys have already made some arrangements to do that.
Okay. Definitely we can.
Okay. Moving on to our next item. Unfortunately, we're going to skip item six, our communications and marketing update. It's unfortunate. We understand there's been a family emergency with our staff member. So we hope everything is okay. And we'll get an update on the next commission meeting. We will move on to item seven, and that is the DBW facility grant presentation. But before I do that, I also want to announce that we do have public comment periods during the next phase of our agenda. We will have multiple public comment periods that have been scheduled throughout the meeting. They will occur after the following reports: the Port San Luis Harbor District Boat Launch Facility, the Boating Infrastructure Grants, Aquatic Center Grants, Law Enforcement Maritime Training Program, For Hire Vessel Licensing Program, For Hire Carrier Program, Yacht and Ship Broker Salesperson Licensing and Enforcement Program, Boating Accident Reporting Program, Law Enforcement Financial Aid Program, Boating Safety Course, the California Boating Card Program, the Life Jacket Outreach Loaner Program, the Youth Boating Education Program, the Dock Walker Program, and the Boating Clean and Green agenda items. Also, agenda item nine will be the public comment period on non-agenda items. The comment period will provide the opportunity for the public to make comments on items not on the agenda. Again, each speaker will have 3 minutes to present their comments. Members of the public are not required to provide their names. However, stating it would make it easier for staff to contact members of the public for any follow-up if necessary. Individual speakers may not pool their comments under one person to obtain a longer comment period. So again, we will now move on to our next item, and that is going to be our facility grant presentation. And at this time, we will now hear from our department staff, and that's Joe Dukes. Joe?
Hi. First, I'll let Bob show the video first.
Okay. And again, this is for the Port San Luis Harbor District Boat Launch Facility.
I'm Chris Munson, the facilities manager for Port San Luis Harbor.
Look okay, Jake.
We're here at Port San Luis today. Port San Luis has a long history. It was originally the main commercial hub for San Luis Obispo County. Up until the railroad was built through San Luis Obispo County, this was the main commercial hub, bringing in both people and goods. During the mid-20th century, the area experienced a decline, and once the railroad was built through San Luis Obispo. In 1954, the citizens of San Luis Obispo County voted to create the Harbor District. Shortly after that, we were given a tidelands grant for most of San Luis Obispo Bay. With that grant, we had hoped to create a large harbor with slips and docks. Unfortunately, we were never able to complete the second breakwater. Fortunately, however, we switched gears and we went to other venues for recreation and commerce. We have created a mooring field, which currently has 160 permanent moorings, along with various rental and guest moorings. We also have an anchorage area off of Avila Pier where owners can stay free of charge for up to 7 days. There are a number of ways out here to get on the water. We have the mobile hoist here, which can launch boats up to 60 tons. Then we have the trailer boat launch behind me, which launches days recreational vessels. And we also have the hoist on the Harford Pier, which can launch smaller skiffs up to 1,000 pounds. In the last 10 to 15 years, stand-up paddleboarding and kayaking has exploded. We currently have various ways which people can get on the water using them. We have Fisherman's Beach, the trailer boat hoist, and we also have the Old Port Beach launch ramp. All of these are great options for launching both kayaks and stand-up paddleboarding because still receive some protection from the breakwater, so there's not much waves on the shore. One popular thing that people do on both stand-up paddleboards and kayaks is they'll go along the inside of the coast towards Coast Guard Beach, which up through stairs they can get to the lighthouse. Port San Luis also has a vibrant commercial fishing fleet. They currently bring on the Hartford Pier about 500,000 pounds of fish. The species range from wild salmon, Dungeness crab, rockfish, and hagfish. The Hartford Pier is the hub of commercial fishing for the port. The Division of Boating and Waterways has done a number of projects to help Port San Luis. Behind me is one example. In 2005, the Division of Boating and Waterways granted us funding for both the hoist replacement, the restrooms, and additional parking for trailer boat parking. We've also received funding for the Old Port Beach launch ramp, the two lighted channel markers, and the public landing facility. Most recently, we've received funding for a harbor patrol boat, which is greatly needed. We're very excited about the development of a new campground out at Port San Luis. The Harbor Terrace development has been 40 years in the making. We've received $18 million in private funds to be able to develop the campground. There will be 166 new spaces, which will include RV camping, tent camping, trailer camping, and there will also be low-cost options, which will make it available to every income group so that anybody from any walk of life can enjoy the camp and the coast. During fishing season, the trailer boat is open 7 days a week and is open at 5 a.m. to 4 p.m. each day. Typically, they launch about 30 boats during weekends and about 60 boats a day on the busier weekends. The boat hoist basin is maintained by dredging, which is done annually. To operate the trailer boat hoist, the Harbor District has entered into an operating agreement with a concessionaire. The concessionaire provides a portion of his revenues back to the Harbor District, and those revenues are used towards maintenance, dredging, and the maintenance of the hoist. Like most areas by the coast, there's always a space constraint as far as parking. The reason Port San Luis is looking for grant funding is because our current dock is in disrepair and needs reconfiguration. There are three main reasons why we're looking to replace the dock. First and foremost, it's met its expected lifespan and it's currently in disrepair. Part of it is sinking right now, and it's very problematic to repair the existing dock. Because the center section is so massive, it makes it almost impossible to repair it. All of the repairs need to be done in place, which means that we have to lift it up and essentially put in the floating sections while it's in place. There's no ability to be able to remove it so that we can maintain and repair it. One of the other issues that we're trying to address is expanding the use of the dock. By slightly reconfigurating the angle of the dock, we'll be able to supply more spaces for boats to tie up. This becomes important, especially in the early morning hours when boats are launching. It creates a bottleneck since there aren't enough places for tie up. So every time a boat ties up, they need to go park their car with the trailer and then return to the boat. In that time, it holds up the line. By expanding the dock and reconfiguring it, it'll allow more boats to be placed on the dock. Because of the popularity of the dock, it has also attracted the stand-up paddleboarders and kayakers. This has created a conflict of use in that both users are trying to use the same area. It becomes especially a problem when both users are trying to use the gangway at the same time. By adding a second gangway, this will alleviate that problem. And by changing the angle of the dock, it will also create a straightaway for kayaks and stand-up paddleboarders to get their vessel on the dock. The new dock will also include a seasonal low freeboard section, which will make it easier for both the kayakers and the stand-up paddleboarders to get on their craft. As an added bonus, it may be possible to reconfigure the dock where the sections can be removed to make it easier to maintain and to dredge underneath it. Currently, the dredging is limited to the areas around the dock, and they cannot dredge directly underneath the dock. By being able to remove the sections, it will allow us to both repair the dock and to get underneath them to dredge. Thank you for your consideration for grant funding.
All right, good morning. Bob, if you could load my PowerPoint, that'd be great. Thank you.
How are you, Joe?
Hi, I'm good. Good. Let's wait for the PowerPoint slide. Oh, there we go. All right. Good morning, Madam Chair Medrano, Commissioners, Acting Deputy Director Fernandez, and Legal Counsel Tobias. My name is Joe Dukes, Project Manager with the Grants and Loans Unit. I am presenting the Port San Luis Harbor District's request for a $442,358 planning and construction grant for improvements to the Port San Luis Trailer Boat Launching Facility. And representing the district is the Harbor District Facility Manager, Chris Munson, who you saw in the video. He will be available to answer any questions you may have later. And we are seeking the commission's advice and comment on this proposed project. Next slide, please. Port San Luis is located approximately 300 miles south of Sacramento and about 2 miles away from Avila Beach in San Luis Obispo County. The port is owned by the district, which operates, manages, and maintains the port. Next slide, please. Port San Luis contains two recreational boat launching facilities, Old Port, which is on the top of the screen, and Port San Luis Trailer to the left of the screen. The Old Port boat launch ramp is only suitable from the beach and surf. For most motorized vessels, the only option for launching and retrieving is the Port San Luis Trailer boat launching facility. Next slide, please. Due to COVID-19 pandemic, the Boating and Waterways Commission was presented with a virtual tour of the site. The Port San Luis Trailer Boat Launch Facility, seen here, features a sling hoist that can launch and retrieve motorized vessels to and from the water. The boat hoist is operated by a concessioner through contract with the district. As mentioned in video, the boat hoist is available 7 days a week during operating hours. Next slide, please. The line at the boat hoist is congested during peak season. Next slide. Okay. As the boat hoist operators wait for boaters to load and move their boats from the boating floats, that creates a bottleneck for launching. Next slide. And next slide. The existing wooden boarding floats provides approximately 95 feet of usable dock space that only allows two vessels to tie up at a time that have reached the end of its useful life. Next slide. The existing piles are in good condition.
If you can monitor, sorry so much.
Oh, okay, let's continue. The existing piles are in good condition and the district's filling system was replaced in the spring of 2020. Next slide. Next slide, please. There you go. Non-motorized boaters with stand-up paddle boards and kayaks have significantly increased usage at the boat launching facility. Next slide. They access the boarding floats via a single gangway, which no longer meets code. Next slide, please. The parking is limited at the port. Next slide. And next slide. So the district has made additional vehicle trailer parking spaces available during fishing season at the parking area closest to the boat launching facility. And next slide. So the proposed project will fund the design permits and construction to install new boating floats, which includes a low freeboard for non-motorized users. That's the light blue at the bottom of the screen. Install new boating floats, which will include a low freeboard. So the existing piles and new fuel lines will be utilized by the new boating floats. The existing gangway will be replaced with two ADA compliant aluminum gangways. The design will increase dock space from two motorized vessels to at least three and allow the district to a space for the water taxi on the lower portion of the dock on the right of the low freeboard. Next slide, please. This table identifies the estimated cost for these improvements. The estimate includes a construction contingency fund of 10% and a 9% contribution from the district for water taxi use on the motorized boarding floats. And next slide. And we estimate that over 15,000 motorized boaters and 18,000 non-motorized boaters would benefit from the improvements annually. and over 672,000 motorized and non-motorized boaters would benefit from the improvements over the 20-year life of this grant. And DBW analysis established that a benefit-cost ratio of over one is worthy of consideration for from a financial perspective. And for this project, the benefit-cost ratio is a 5.06. And next slide. DBW recommends the condition that the district shall contribute 9% of the total project cost for improvements of the Port St. Louis boat launching facility for water taxi use on the motorized boating floats, and that the district shall reduce the boat launching and retrieval fees for boats over 24 feet to $26.50 by August 31st of 2020. And next slide. And at this time, DBW seeks the Commission's advice and comment on this proposed $442,358 Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund Planning and Construction Grant with conditions to the Port St. Louis Harbor District for the Port St. Louis Trader Boat Launching Facility improvements as described in the August 13, 2020 feasibility report. And that concludes my presentation, and we'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Joe. Appreciate the presentation and that excellent video that you shared. I'll open it up now for public comment, and then we'll segue with comments from our commissioners. Is there any public comment on this item, the Port St. Louis Harbor District Boat Launch Facility?
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Bob Lloyd with AGP Video. If you could please raise your hand to indicate that you'd like to speak, that'd be helpful.
Yes, and we do have one person who did sign up to give a comment on this agenda item. So we will go with him first. It was Chris Musen. Apologies if I'm not saying your name correctly. Chris, if you could raise your hand and we can unmute you.
Chris, you are available to speak.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Commission, for having me. We're really excited about the potential for grant funding for this. We really have heavy day use at the Port St. Louis, as we don't have any regular slips. And so that's really what draws people from far and near to the port. It's been in the last 10 years, we've really seen an explosion of use, especially now that the stand-up paddleboarders and the kayakers have caught on to that location. And this reconfiguration and replacement will really serve many purposes. It will open up the use for both the motorized and non-motorized users, and it will expand use. So it really helps us do what we do best. And we really appreciate your time and consideration with this. And we'd like to thank Joe, Karen, Deborah, and Evan for all their hard work during this process. They've been really great, and you guys have a really great staff there. And we really appreciate your consideration. Thank you.
Chris, thank you. Appreciate the additional information. And again, we want to reiterate the great presentation that was provided to us. Are there any other public comments on this agenda item? Again, the Port St. Louis Harbor District Boat Launch Facility.
If you'd like to make public comment, please raise your hand or press *9 on your phone now. Madam Chair, we don't see anybody raising their hands.
Excellent. Thank you so much. We will now close the public comment period on this item, and I'll bring it back to the Commission for questions, comments, and advice. Any one of our commissioners would like to have a question?
I have a comment.
Okay.
So what I liked about the proposal, and I live near that area, and it's beautiful and vibrant, and I've been through there when there's just a lot of people there and not a lot of places for them to. But what I like about, first and foremost, the ADA access is a must. You have to provide equal access to anyone who wants to use the area in a safe way. But what I'd like to point out too, and I guess more from my past, the non-motorized users, kind of like back when I used to skate or surf, they're going to get in the water whether they're supposed to or not, and whether there's a viable way for them to get in or not. So it really provides a public safety improvement, because they're gonna I by my house, I see them, they'll crawl through people's backyards to get their kayaks into the ocean. There has to be a viable way for them to get there, because they're going to get in the water. That's the mindset, and that's the way that community operates. So there has to be a viable, safe way to access the water. I think that was one of the highlights of the proposal.
Excellent. Great point. Thank you, Commissioner Ehrman. Any other comments or questions from my fellow commissioners? Yes, Commissioner, Vice Chair, Commissioner Pettibone.
No, I thought it was a great presentation. I thought the video showed the space well and the improvements that are needed. And I could see with the increased use, especially of non-motorized, that these changes will really benefit the region. And I'm excited to see what's going to happen there. And when the appropriate time is, I'm happy to move it.
Wonderful. Any other comments or questions? I just want to highlight a couple, again, with Commissioner Ehrman's comments. I am very, very excited to see that they're going to reconfigure the entire dock to, again, make it more accessible. And again, having that second gangway to be able to, again, provide for this increase in use for non-motorized vessels, I thought was incredibly important. So I, too, echo Commissioner Ehrman's comments. If there are no other comments or questions. Oh, yes, Commissioner Pierre.
The new guy always has to talk.
Absolutely.
I'll just comments and then questions. First of all, I'm intimately familiar with Port San Luis. I was bringing a boat up from San Diego, and I left my vessel there for almost 2 months on a mooring. And it's a tremendous community of boaters. We were easily able to find someone who was taking care of it. So I'm very happy to support that boating community. And I've always said that Port San Luis is one of the true gems, undiscovered gems of the coast on California, because I don't, my folks live in the Morro Bay area in Los Osos around the corner.
Did we lose Commissioner Pierre? Commissioner Pierre? I think we've lost Commissioner Pierre.
Yeah, his microphone is open, but it looks like there's a connection problem.
Okay. Well, we can always regroup with him if he has additional comments, but points well taken. But we need to wait for him so that we could take the following step, which is I'm asking for a motion to approve, if that is the advice of this commission.
Virginia, you may want to just postpone this item for and go on to the next one and then come back to it.
Well, yeah, absolutely. We can do that. Okay. Well, actually, we have a 15-minute break scheduled for this time. Maybe we can try to regroup with Commissioner Pierre. So let me look at the time.
If we get to have somebody from the staff reach out to Mr. Pierre and share my phone number if there's an issue.
Yes. Thank you. Yes.
Okay. So we'll reconvene in 15 minutes.
We're on a break at this point.
Well, that looks to me that we will convene back at 10:25. How about that?
Thank you, ma'am.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, Madam Chair. We are back in session.
Thank you so much. So at this time, I think now we have Commissioner Peer. Welcome back, Commissioner Peer.
I apologize. It's the technical version of the old vaudeville hook where they would just pull you off the stage.
Not a problem. Would you like to complete your comments that you were sharing?
Actually, I appreciate the commission's time. My question was, being familiar with Port San Luis, is I don't understand where the water taxi runs to. It's more of a question of curiosity than anything else.
So, Joe,
I'll defer that question to Chris Munson.
Okay. Chris,
yes. Can you hear me again?
Yes, sir.
We can.
Yeah, the water taxi right now, that services both the mooring patrons and also the people who are tying up our rental moorings who also use that hoist. And right now they use that for convenience because some of the others, it's harder for the people from their vehicles to get to. They hop on the water right there just because it's convenient. So that's why we were proposing to cover of the costs just for the yacht spot. And normally that's really used for the people using the trailer or boat race anyway. So it kind of helped out both parties in that.
Understood. What's your usual, yeah, I mean, that's a pretty big mooring field. Is that usually pretty full in the summer times?
It doesn't fluctuate that much. We do have some rental moorings that do definitely get used. There's generally about during our summer periods, there's usually at least two people using it. But for our more permanent moorings, we have, I believe, 106 permanent mooring users right now with the ability for, I think, about 230. So we definitely an uptick recently in more user. That's good news because for a while there it seemed like we were losing users, but now it's starting to go back up again. So that's great.
Great, thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other comments or questions? If not, we will move to a motion. Yes, we would actually like to now motion if there is anybody who is so inclined to move
forward.
I'll
make a motion.
I'll second.
Motion by Vice Chair Pettibone, and I'm sorry to catch the second.
I'll second.
Second by Commissioner Ehrman. Roll call, please.
I'm going to start with Commissioner Ehrman.
I guess the appropriate answer is yes or
approve. Is that right, Catherine?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Commissioner Peer.
Approve.
Okay. Commissioner Hawkins.
Approved.
Vice Chair Pettibone.
Approve.
And Madam Chair.
Yes, approve.
All right, thank you.
It looks like it was a unanimous vote. Should we put that on for the public record as well? Motion is approved. And thank you again to Joe and our staff member Dukes and Chris Munson. Thank you again. We appreciate that. We will now move on to our division program reports. At this time, we will hear from our department staff, and we will start with Debbie Holmes, who will give us an update on the Boating Infrastructure Grant Program. Debbie.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
There's my PowerPoint. My name is Deborah Holmes. I'm a manager one in the Grants and Loans Unit. And today I'll be presenting a program update on the Federal Boating Infrastructure Grant Program, also known as BIG. Next slide, please. The purpose of BIG is to construct, renovate, or maintain visitor tie-up facilities for recreational transient vessels that are 26 feet or more in length and staying 15 days or less. BIG is a federally funded program that is managed by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and funded from the Sport Fish Restoration Fund. DBW is the designated state entity responsible for administering this program. Next slide, please. The BIG program offers two different grant awards. Tier 1 grants provide up to $200,000 for projects in California. Tier 2 applications are ranked nationally and up to $1.5 million may be awarded per project. Each grantee must meet all eligibility requirements and provide a minimum of a 25% match. This year's application guidance was released on June 19th with a submission deadline of July 31st. We received one application, which DBW is currently reviewing. If eligible, the application will be submitted to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service by September 14th of 2020, and awards are typically announced in the spring of each year. Next slide, please. BIG eligible activities include tie-up facilities, which can be slips, piers, mooring buoys, docks, and gangways. Amenities may include fuel stations, restrooms, utilities, and laundry service. Security is lighting, communications, and beacons. Safe harbor can be breakwaters, wave attenuators, and seawalls. Soft costs would include engineering and permitting, and this grant can also pay for a one-time dredging of up to $200,000. Next slide, please. Since 2000, California has been awarded over $17 million for 35 infrastructure projects with 22 public and private entities. 17 of these were Tier 1 grants, and 18 of them were Tier 2 grants. Next slide, please. DBW currently has 5 active BIG projects, which are listed here on the slide. Next slide, please. California was recently notified that these 3 BIG projects will be awarded shortly, and they include a Tier 2 grant for Oceanside Harbor District for the replacement and expansion of the 45-year-old Jolly Roger Dock, a Tier 2 grant for San Mateo Harbor District to replace and expand the existing dilapidated H Dock at Pillar Point Harbor, and a Tier 1 grant for the Port St. Louis to renovate the Avila Pier Landing. Next slide, please. So this concludes my presentation. I encourage you to visit the DBW Grants and Loans website for additional information on the BIG program. Are there any questions at this time regarding the program or project?
Thank you so much, Debbie. We will first hear from the public. Are there any public comments on the Boating Infrastructure Grant Program?
If you'd like to, please raise your hand or press star 9. We can select you to be able to speak. Madam Chair, I do not see anybody raising their hand.
Great, thank you. We will now move on to our commissioners. Are there any questions or comments on Debbie's presentation for the Boating Infrastructure Grant Program? Seeing none. Debbie, thank you so much for your excellent presentation, and we will move forward.
Great, next. Thank you.
Thank you, Debbie. We will now move on to the Aquatic Center Grants, and that will be a presentation from Amy Rigby. Amy.
Hi.
Hi, Amy.
Am I on?
You are on.
Good. Here we go. As Virginia said, my name is Amy Rigby, and I'll be presenting an update on DBW's Aquatic Center Grant Program. Next slide. DBW receives funding for this program from the Federal Sport Fish Restoration and Boating Trust Fund that is administered by the Coast Guard. DBW is required to follow federal and Coast Guard guidelines when granting these funds to aquatic centers. Successful applicants must provide on-the-water education. Participants must learn boating skills, not just have a boat ride, and participants must wear life jackets. Application scoring is designed to give points for identifying and addressing area-specific safety issues. An example of this would be, say, one of our grantees is in an area with a high number of power boating accidents, and they address this by offering a power boating safety course for operators, for first-time operators. That sort of thing is one way someone could address an issue. Application scoring is, next slide, please. So who can apply? The program's purpose is to provide funding to existing successful on-the-water boating education programs. Through the grant application and scoring process, DBW identifies programs that are already doing a good job teaching people boating safety and grants funds to augment their existing programs so that they can educate additional people. The types of agencies that can apply are colleges and universities, public agencies, and nonprofit organizations. And the program supports all sorts of boating activities, non-competitive, all sorts of paddling, whitewater rafting, canoeing, kayaking, stand-up paddleboarding, power boating, such as open motorboat classes, water skiing, personal watercraft, and sailing and windsurfing. Next slide, please. So the categories that people can get funding for are equipment, scholarships, instructor training, and then events that support National Safe Boating Week events for the public, or maybe other events that people have that are in their area that might be a local event that we can capitalize on to educate people. The program does not provide funding for staffing or for permanent structures, but items such as storage sheds or modular removable docking can be purchased with the grant. Next slide, please. In the last fiscal year, in 1920, we received $1 million for this program, but the amount varies depending on the amount of federal funding that we receive. In 2019, 42 aquatic centers received DBW grant funding that allowed them to train 55,000 people in boating safety, and 39% of those were from underserved populations. And the other events that I was discussing previously, various events that the aquatic centers are involved in, whether they receive grant funding from us or not, but they reach out to about 100,000 other people at those events. Next slide, please. Some recent program improvements that we've undertook. We revamped our grant to ensure that it is in line with the Coast Guard funding objectives. Applications are reviewed and scored by an independent review team. Our grant agreements and program guidelines and strengthened our monitoring procedures. And during the COVID-19 outbreak, we've been working with aquatic centers to help them provide more online programming that then people can do a portion of the program online and then come out and get those on the water skills. So kind of breaking up the program that way. They've been able to purchase safety supplies for COVID, for sanitation and the like. And also extra boats to allow for physical distancing. Some of the two-person or multiple-person boats, they've been able to get some single-person boats to allow them to spread out a little further from each other. And just another update, many programs right now are not offering programming. Some of them can do rentals, but the ones that have been offered programming or have been able to, they all have wait lists. It's very popular. Lots of people want to be involved. Some of the wait list is just from increased popularity of people wanting to get out. And some is having to restructure the class and maybe have fewer people. But all in all, they've been very popular. with a lot of inquiries. And our 2021 funding, the application is scheduled hopefully to be open mid-September through the end of October. And that information is available on our website, and informed of what's going on, and try to keep everyone informed. So next slide, please. This concludes my presentation, and if you have any questions at this time, I will be happy to answer them. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Amy. We will first open it up to public comments. Are there any public comments on the Aquatic Center Grants Program?
If you'd like to make a public comment, please raise your hand or press star 9 now. Madam Chair, I don't see anybody raising their hands.
Excellent. Thank you. Okay, we will now move it on to our commissioners. Are there any comments or questions on the Aquatic Center grant program for Amy? Yes, we will start with Vice Chair Pettibone.
Yeah, I was just going to say, this is one of the things I'm really proud that we do in the state. I think it's really important to expanding inclusion and diversity in all the sports. As a board member of U.S. Sailing, this is a top priority for us. And I know that this is really an entry level for a lot of people getting into certainly sport of sailing, but other things as well, paddleboarding, kayaking, otherwise. And so I'm really glad of the work we're doing, and thank you for the hard work of the staff on this.
Thanks.
Any other comments or questions? I have a couple of questions. So Amy, a couple of things that caught my attention. You said that the grants are for existing programs. So that was a little bit of a, I guess I was trying to figure out, what if there are areas, obviously there's some real needs in some of these communities, but they don't have an existing program. So they, would they be automatically shut out of being able to apply for some of these grant dollars?
Well, not necessarily. It's structured towards existing programs because we've tried to partner with people that haven't done something before, and there's a lot of problems sometimes with that. You know, people don't know what they're doing. So what we do is we encourage them to come to our meetings and work with them and have them work with other aquatic centers to try to figure out what they want to do. Because a lot of times what's happened in the past with someone who has never run a program is they don't realize all the potential things that could happen where they can't offer programming. And so we like them to at least have done research and figured out what they're going to do and see if they have some funding, matching funding, since we don't do staffing and a lot of other things. There's a lot of things they'd need to have in place to show that they're able to get a program up and running. So they'd need to bring some existing pieces with them to show us they could do it.
Okay, thank you. That kind of helps me with the second part of that question is, in with your review teams, do you have a component on with your review team in terms of scoring their criteria to ensure that, again, some of these underserved areas where greater need is, they take maybe a higher precedence or they score higher? I guess I'm trying to figure out how it's ranked so that, again, we are making sure that we are doing our due diligence and making sure that communities, much to Vice Chair Pettibone's comments, we are augmenting or enhancing or bringing, again, opportunities for people who have never had, again, exposure to paddleboarding, canoeing, even swimming, having the opportunity to competitively compete for these grants and making sure that our communities that are most in need have access to these funds.
There are questions in the application that are geared around describing your need and what opportunities people have to vote in that area and things like that. And so there it's when they're addressing just overall need too, because it, according to the Coast Guard, who we have to keep their mandates in mind as well, they are not just about it being for needy communities. They have to prove that there's a safety need in that community as well. So it's kind of a combination. We can't just give money to people based on the fact that they've never had an opportunity to go out. It also go out and boat. It also has to be, and there's a safety need in that area. Does that hopefully that makes sense. So it's kind of, they want that too. But so the questions surround that, they kind of can show us both things. You know, it's really ideal when someone, there's a need that we want to get people out there and have an opportunity, and they can demonstrate that there's a good safety need in that area to do so.
And I see that they both work in tandem, because clearly when you have communities that they see an increase or an uptick in drownings, because, you know, again, some of these communities have never been exposed, don't know how to properly use, again, a life jacket. They don't know how to get into the water safely, don't know how to canoe safely. I see that those work in tandem.
Right. Yes. And so, yeah, they're able to talk about that in the application.
Great. Thank you. You've answered my questions. If there are no other comments or questions, I'd like to thank Amy again for your presentation and continue doing your great work, Amy. Thank you.
Thanks.
Next, we will move on to Brian Carroll, who will give us an update on the Law Enforcement Maritime Training Program. Brian.
Good morning, commissioners, and welcome to our new commissioners. My name is Brian Carroll. I'm the training coordinator for the Marine Law Enforcement Training Program. So statewide training provides standardized curriculum training to law enforcement officers, harbor patrol officers, and lifeguards, and others that work in a Marine Patrol environment. And by having the statewide training, we're ensuring uniform enforcement of boating laws on all of California's waterways. There are more than 100 local government agencies providing boating law enforcement in California. So we want to make sure that we're comprehensive, current, and effective, and having reliable consistency. Pictured here on this slide is one of our instructors teaching students how to perform a carriage requirement inspection while conducting a mock enforcement stop. And this is during our inland boat operators course held in Sacramento. Carriage requirement inspection basically just checks life jackets, type 4 throwable, a fire extinguisher, and a sound emitting device. Next slide, please. Training statistics are based on a federal fiscal year because this is how the division reports the statistics back to the United States Coast Guard. So for fiscal 19, that would be October 1, 18 through September 30, 19. The training program operated on a $437,000 budget. And with that, we were able to train, that is from the United States Coast Guard Federal Trust Fund for Boating Safety. And with that, we were able to train 413 officers in 31 classes covering 8 separate disciplines. It is through maintaining partnerships with local agencies throughout the state that the division is able to offer so many high quality courses and have sort of that cost savings. Instructors remain on agency time while the division reimburses their travel expenses. Also, partnering with multiple agencies affords the division to offer high quality courses by utilizing subject matter experts from throughout the state. And looking forward to the fiscal 20 statistics, I just want to note that with there will be a decrease because of the COVID-19 related restrictions. To date so far, we've probably lost about 109 training positions, spots in training due to the restrictions related to COVID. We had to cancel 8 different classes. Pictured here is training vessels transiting through the Port of Los Angeles. They're en route to open water in order to practice underway operations during the basic maritime officers course, and that is hosted by the Maritime Law Enforcement Training Center. Next slide, please. So we trained about the same amount of officers as we did in fiscal 18, just a difference of 2. So we maintained our same training amount. We also updated the Marine Firefighter Operations course in POST. POST is the Commission on Peace Officer Standards and Training. They basically make sure that we're training to the standards that are statewide mandates. And So the Marine Fire Operator course was the last one we needed to update in post to be current. And at this point in time, all division courses are current in post. We added three new instructors. One instructor was added to the Inland Boat Operator course. That individual is from Calaveras County Sheriff's Office. And we added two new instructors to teach the Boating Accident Investigation course, one from Tuolumne Sheriff's Office and one from San Joaquin Sheriff's. Pictured here is the Rescue Boat Operations course in Marina Del Rey. This is hosted by the Los Angeles County Lifeguards. And this particular exercise is simulating underway patient transfer from the Los Angeles County Lifeguard vessel to the U.S. Coast Guard helicopter. This skill is important because when you need to transport an ill or injured person rapidly to a receiving facility, helicopter gets here a lot faster than a boat. Next slide, please. So looking forward in to fiscal 20, some of our goals, we want to expand the Boating Under the Influence course from 3 days to 4 days. This is going to allow us additional practice time to administer the standardized field sobriety tests. And this also is going to allow us to add a report writing component. Those are expressed needs based on feedback from surveys that are handed out at the end of each class. And also from our instructors, we've decided that these are two components necessitating an increase in time of the course. We're also going to develop a first responder course in order to develop, to provide the needs, training needs for non-sworn officers working in a maritime environment. And then we're going to continue to evaluate ongoing needs by continuing to meet with partnering agencies, by attending the California Boating Safety Officers Association, otherwise known as CBSOA, and the California State Sheriff's Association, otherwise known as CSSA, training symposiums. Pictured here on this slide is the Marine Firefighter Operations course, also held in Marina Del Rey, hosted by the Los Angeles County Lifeguards as well. And this particular exercise is a swim assessment in full firefighter protective equipment. This allows students to experience being in the water in a controlled setting. So in the event they were to fall in the water while conducting actual fire suppression duties, they would have this baseline experience to fall back on. Final slide, please. So here's my contact information. There is additional information, including some videos on the Marine Law Enforcement Training Program webpage. This does include my presentation. Are there any questions regarding the training program?
Brian, thank you so much for that. At this time, we will now open it up to public comment. Are there any public comments on the Law Enforcement Maritime Training Program?
I'm so sorry. If there's anyone for public comment, please raise your hand or press star 9 now. Madam Chair, it doesn't seem like we have anybody raising their hand.
Great, thank you. At this time, we'll ask my fellow commissioners, do you have any questions or comments of Brian on the Law Enforcement Maritime Training Program? Seeing none. Brian, thank
could
you.
Can I interrupt just one second, Bob Lloyd? Ramona, I understand it looks like you have lost video on us, so you've dialed in by phone. Can we hear a test from you, please?
Yes, I only have audio. I don't have video at this moment. I'm working on that.
All right. If you'd like, you can call me on my phone, and I can assist you with that.
Okay.
Apologize, Madam Chair, for the interruption.
Not a problem. Thank you, Bob. Again, Brian, thank you so much for that presentation.
You're welcome.
And, look forward to hearing future updates. Thank you. We will move on now to the For-Hire Operators Vessel Licensing Program. And for that, we have Paris Shaw. Paris.
If you can please put my slides up, Bob. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Paris Shaw. I am currently the administrator for the for-hire operator licensing program and the for-hire vessel carrier insurance verification certificate program. The first program I will update you on today is the for-hire operator licensing program. All pictures featured in this presentation are before COVID-19. Change slide, please. A for-hire license is required by vessel operators who carry more than 3 passengers for compensation in non-navigable waters, non-navigable waters being those that do not lead to the ocean. Typical for-hire license holders are held by individuals who operate vessels for fishing excursions, summer camps, tours, water taxis, water skiing services, and other related activities. Change slide, please. We currently have 320 active for-hire vessel operators throughout the state. The for-hire vessel operator licensing program has a budget of $10,000, which is used to proctor exams each year. These funds are allocated using Harbors and Watercraft revolving funds. Next slide, please. During federal fiscal year 1920, the division issued 39 new licenses and renewed 20 licenses. DBW has contracted with retired Lieutenant Doug Powell, who holds a 110 captain's license through United States Coast Guard. During the COVID-19 pandemic, we postponed proctoring exams in the months of March, April, and May. As of June, the division was able to purchase personal protective equipment, along with following state and county health department guidelines in order to resume exam proctoring with new safety protocols in place. We continue to proctor exams statewide. Change slide, please. Our goal for the upcoming fiscal year is to get regulations in place, which includes a fee for the services provided so the program can become cost effective. We are also currently working with the contract unit to go out to bid to an inquire exam proctor for the next 3 years. Next slide, please. The other program I am responsible for is the for-hire vessel carrier insurance verification certificate program. Next slide, please. The for-hire vessel carrier perform passenger transportation services for compensation, such as fishing charters, sightseeing tours, dinner cruises, etc. The division requires every for-hire vessel company to procure adequate insurance. Certificates are good for one calendar year, January 1st through December 31st, and all applicants must renew each December for the new calendar year. We currently charge $25 for new and renewal applications. Next slide, please. The program was transferred to DBW from the Public Utilities Commission July 1st, 2018. The Public Utilities Commission transferred 74 registrants to DBW, and out of the 74 registrants, 63 renewed with the division. Next slide, please. Since the division took over the program 2 years ago, we have acquired 153 new applicants, with 115 coming from the last fiscal year. We currently have 216 active for-hire vessel carrier companies. Next slide, please. The division will be operating under the Public Utilities Commission general orders until the division is able to establish regulations. We continue to work diligently with commercial marine insurance companies to provide insurance documents. And we also provide outreach to for-hire vessel carrier companies to inform them of program guidelines and requirements. Next slide, please. This concludes my presentation. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Paris. At this time, we will now open it up to public comment. Is there anyone from the public who would like to make a comment on the for-hire operators vessel licensing program?
Let's see. I did not see anyone registered to give comments, but if anyone would like to give a comment, please raise your hand or use the *9 feature if you're dialing in by phone. And Madam Chair, I do not see anyone.
Okay, we will move on. Amy, I'm sorry, Paris, continue on, please.
Oh, that's the full, that was the two programs.
Okay, no more. Thank you so much. I'll just now open it up to our commissioners. Are there any comments or questions for Paris on either of her two programs, both the for-hire operators vessel licensing program and the for-hire carrier program? Seeing none. Paris, that's how good a job you did. Thank you so much. Excellent. Just one quick question, though. You said that there were, in the slide, it was 116 new applications. Is that correct?
Yeah, from the last fiscal year, yes, there was.
So is that a significant increase or is that about average?
That's a significant increase. We had 63 starting out, and we now have 216. So it's quite a wow. significant increase.
Excellent. Thank you. Appreciate Thank that. You. And okay, well, here we'll move on now to our next staff report, and that is from Monique Cabral. And Monique is going to give us an update on the Yacht and Ship Broker Salesperson Licensing and Enforcement Program. Monique.
Good morning, members of the commission. My name is Monique Cabral, and I am the licensing administrator in the Yacht and Ship Unit. Today, I will be updating you on the Yacht and Ship licensing and enforcement programs. Next slide, please. The law mandates that Division of Boating and Waterways to license and regulate yacht and ship brokers and salespersons in California. DBW enforces activities of licensees to ensure compliance and provide consumer protection. Next slide, please. Yacht brokers are individuals who engage in the selling, purchasing, renting, or negotiates prices of vessels for sale. Next slide, please. Licensing fees for new brokers' licenses are currently $225. There are currently 342 active brokers in California. Next slide, please. Salespersons are individuals that work for a licensed yacht and ship broker in California. Brokers must enter into a broker to salesperson agreement when bringing any salesperson on board. The agreement will spell out commission breakdowns and scope of work for the salesperson. Brokers cannot compensate individuals not licensed with our unit. Next slide, please. Licensing fees for new salesperson licenses are currently $150. There are currently 626 active salespersons in California. Next slide, please. The Yacht and Ship Unit proctors licensing examinations in three locations in California once a month. Exams are 100 questions, multiple choice, and to pass, it's 70%. Applicants can take the exam up to three times. If the applicant is not successful in a third attempt, they will have to wait 6 months before they can take the test again. California is the only state that requires salespersons and brokers to take a written exam in order to get their license. Next slide, please. Due to COVID-19, exams were postponed in the months of March, April, May, and June. In July, adhering to state and county health department requirements, we were able to resume proctoring the exams again with safety protocols in place. Next slide, please. In fiscal year 2019-2020, the Yacht and Ship Unit issued 26 new broker licenses, 10 new branch licenses, and 155 new salesperson's licenses. Next slide, please. The Enforcement Unit conducts site visits of yacht brokerages to ensure compliance. Brokerage records are inspected during the site visits, such as trust accounts, listing agreements, and closing statements. Brokers must retain transaction records for 4 years and make available to the department for inspection upon request. Enforcement also investigates consumer complaints against brokers and salespersons. Complaint forms are available on our department website for consumers to utilize if an issue arises. Next slide, please. Here are some enforcement data for fiscal year 2019-2020. We issued 9 cease and desist letters to unlicensed individuals. 3 brokers were fined for a total of $5,500, and site visits were conducted when necessary. Next slide, please. This concludes my presentation. Do you have any questions regarding the programs today?
Thank you, Monique. At this time, we will open it up for public comment. Is there one that would like to make a comment at this time on the Yacht and Ship Broker Salesperson Licensing and Enforcement Program?
Madam Chair, we do have one hand raised, but Megan, do you have a list of people that would like to speak?
Yes, there were two people who registered to comment on this agenda item, so I'm just going to call them out in the order I received them. So the first comment will be Dean West. The second comment will be Mick McGuire. And then I'll move on to the raise hand feature, whomever raised their hand first. So Dean West, if please dial star 9 to, or I'm sorry, star 6 to unmute yourself if need be.
Madam Chair, it's actually star 9. Actually, Mr. West, you are available to speak. We can hear you.
Okay, thank you very much. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for giving us the opportunity to speak. My name is Dean West. I'm Vice President of the California Yacht Brokers Association, and I've been in the recreational boating business in California for 40 years. Currently, the recreational boating industry in California and across the nation is undergoing an incredible boom market, the likes of which hasn't been seen in decades. In spite of this heightened activity, the perception among many of our yacht brokers and boat dealers is that the Division of Boating and Waterways is being deconstructed and marginalized within the Department of Parks and Recreation. Within the last quarter, we have seen the loss of two key personnel within the Yacht and Shipbroker Licensing Department, personnel that are needed to help regulate an increasingly frenetic market. We brokers and salespeople are seeing levels of activity that many have never experienced before. With this heightened activity comes challenges for the compliance and enforcement personnel in the division. Unfortunately, there are not nearly enough personnel to effectively regulate and enforce the Harbors and Navigation Code in a state of this size. Additionally, we are seeing wholesale assaults on access for fishing, with giant swaths of fishable areas being taken out or proposed to be taken out of use. The legislature was unable to give the fishing community a sensible and badly needed year-long license. License sales continue to plummet, and as a result, badly needed revenues disappear. We are seeing little in the way of boating infrastructure projects. Marine and storage space is increasingly becoming unavailable and unaffordable due to scarcity. Despite calls from across the recreational boating industry, which would be brokers and dealers, marinas, boating clubs, yacht clubs, harbor masters, boat yards, for the DBW, or more likely the underwriter, the Department of Parks and Recreation, to commission and fund a report on the economic impact of recreational boating on the state of California, nothing has been done. DBW has not commissioned an economic report since the 1990s under Director Raisback. Those of us in the industry know California recreational boating to be a $20 billion plus a year industry, supporting tens of thousands of jobs. Yet the entire industry is marginalized under Parks and Recreation, wherein DBW is forced to operate on a skeleton staff and some of their best people leave for greener pastures or out of frustration. If the government of the state of California were to really know and appreciate the impact of recreational boating in dollars, jobs, and recreational benefits to a wide section of the citizenry, we wouldn't be forced to be operating a state agency under dated 30-year-old assumptions. And our state wouldn't continue to underperform neighboring states and regions. We wouldn't be losing residents and revenues to these areas. And our state's resources would be indicative of the vibrant recreational boating economy that we in the industry know exists, yet the state continues to undervalue and marginalize. Those are the ends of my comments. Thank you very much.
Dean, thank you so much for your comments, your testimony, and your thoughts. Points very well taken.
Madam Chair, we have Michael McGuire was registered to speak. Mr. McGuire, you can unmute your microphone and give us your comments.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. Dean West serves with me on the board of directors for the California Yacht Brokers Association, and I deferred to him to make those comments. The only thing additionally I'd like to add at this time is that in the report that was just given from the division regarding licensing, again, it was referenced that salespeople are employees of the brokers and the brokerages. And in fact, that ruling has been changed, and we fall under the same guidelines as real estate agents. So I think it's important to make that clarification that we are at this point independent contractors.
Okay.
Thank you, public. Madam Chair, we have actually one more person is asked to speak. George, and I cannot pronounce your last name, I apologize. You may unmute yourself.
Hi, I'm George Sikich. I'm the president of the CYBA, and Dean, thank you very much. The one thing we're concerned about is, and you didn't address it, we know about the two departures. Have you in place or do you have people that are going to replace Monique and Fahim?
Hi, this is Karina Duggar. I'm the manager over.
Hi, Karina.
Hi. I'm the manager over our boating safety unit. I want you to know, please rest assured, I am working diligently. He received a promotion and has moved on within State Park, so his expertise is still there. Monique is not going anywhere. Monique is still here, and she has.
I meant Miranda. I'm sorry.
I was going to get there. Monique has, let me just acknowledge her real quick, that she has done a phenomenal job keeping the desk going, and Parrish Shaw has also stepped in to help Monique. So they are working hard. Miranda abruptly retired really within a week notice. Her position is currently being flown. The final filing date for applicants to apply is August 18th. I've already started reviewing the applicants. Just a little insight, I've received so far to date over 250 applications. So I promise you, I came from the industry, and I give you my word, I will do my best to get someone dynamite in there. And, I'll work as fast as I can. There are sometimes, it does take a little time. It's not like private industry where you can just hire someone that day and they start. There will be training needed, but I'm right there with you along the way. And I promise you, I'll get it done.
Okay. Thank you very much. Monique, I apologize. I knew it was Miranda. Sorry about that.
That's okay. That's okay.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, we do have one more person, Jerry Desmond, who has raised his hand. Mr. Desmond, you're allowed to talk.
Great. Thank you. Can you hear me, Bob and folks?
Yes, we can.
Thank you. Jerry Desmond with Recreational Boaters of California. And of course, welcome the new commissioners and look forward to working with all of you. I just wanted to take a second to note that RBOC supports the comments and concerns that are raised by the three representatives of the California Yacht Brokers Association for sure. And we have additional comments that we'll be making in the public comment portion of this meeting in regards to, DBW and the Water Harbors of Watercraft Revolving Fund, et cetera, but wanted to endorse their comments today in this section as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry.
Madam Chair, that concludes the public comment.
Great, thank you. To Dean, to Mick, George, and Jerry, thank you so much for those comments. Again, we absolutely, I as the chair and my fellow commissioners, I can tell you that your comments, again, are well noted, and we will respond accordingly. So thank you so much for providing that insight and that testimony for today's meeting. At this time, I will open it up to questions and comments from any of the commissioners with regard to the Yacht and Ship Broker Salesperson Licensing and Enforcement Program. Are there any comments or any questions? Yes, Vice Chair Pettibone.
Yeah, I guess... I wasn't aware of the shifting staff levels, and pursuant to what we've all seen and talked about at the beginning of this hearing with the use of boats and use of waterways and the increasing sales and demand, I guess I'm a little concerned that we sent, and I understand because of the need of the pandemic, but I do worry that we've sent staff away on contact tracing, and yet we have holes and gaps, and it's causing DBW to perhaps be not as effective or as quick on some of the things that the current circumstances need from DBW. And And so I guess that would just, I'd just like to, you know, make sure that we keep our eye on the ball, that DBW needs to do what it needs to do for this community too. And so not to lose sight of that.
Yeah. Absolutely. This is Ramona. I'm just noting that concern. Yes.
Great. Any other comments or questions for Monique? And again, the Yacht and Ship Brokers Salesperson Licensing and Enforcement Program. If not, we will move on. Again, thank you so much, Monique, for that report. And we'll move now with our next staff member. And that's
you're welcome.
Joanna Andrade, and she will be presenting on both the Boating Accident Reporting Program as well as the Law Enforcement Financial Aid Program. Joanna.
Good morning. Thank you. My name is Joanna Andrade, and I administer the Recreational Boating Accident Program and the Boating Safety and Enforcement Financial Aid Program. Today, I'll be leading my presentation with the Recreational Boating Accident Program. Next slide, please. The reporting of boating accidents to the U.S. Coast Guard is one of several activities that the division must perform in order to receive federal funding for our boating safety programs. The division also uses the data collected by boating accidents to direct the activities, such as our education and outreach programs, media campaign, law enforcement, and aquatic center program. Next slide. Boaters are required to report when a person dies or disappears, when there is an injury sustained beyond first aid, or property damage is over $500, or there's a total loss of a vessel. Law enforcement is also required to report if they receive grant funding or respond to a fatality. Accident data received by the division. Did I lose my PowerPoint?
I am so sorry, ma'am. give me one moment. I didn't realize the timer was still running here. Oh, where did it go?
Thank you. Accident data received by the division is protected under Section 656 of the Harbors and Navigation Code, and our use for this data is limited to statistical analysis only. Next slide. Currently, we collect boating accidents in two manners. The public completes the boating accident report form, which is referred to as the BAR. A portion of this form was seen on the previous slide. Local law enforcement, fire departments, and harbor masters use the Boating Accident Database, which was launched in August of 2019. We are currently teaching the participants of the Boating Accident Investigation class how to use the database and best practices. The division works closely with the database contractor and the end users to make enhancements and ensure it meets all federal reporting requirements. Next slide. This chart shows the 10-year historical accident, injury, and fatalities totals collected by DBW. As you can see, accident totals fluctuate from year to year. In 2018, there was 474 accidents, 210 injuries, and 35 fatalities. In 2019, there was 450 accidents, 207 injuries, and 41 fatalities. Next slide. DBW also participates in one of many NASBLAS policy committees. This particular committee that I participate in is referred to as the Engineering Reporting and Analysis Committee. The committee identifies, evaluates, and analyzes recreational boating data and other related information that can shed light on factors associated with boating accidents, be used to inform development of state and national level safety policies, programs, and campaigns, and ultimately be used to measure the effectiveness. Next slide. Now I'd like to go over the Boating Safety and Enforcement Financial Aid Program. The purpose of the program is to provide local governmental agencies whose waterways have a high usage by transient boaters and an insufficient tax base to fully support a boating safety and enforcement program. The program is not intended to fully fund a participating agency's boating safety and enforcement activities, and agency's participation is entirely voluntary. Currently, there are 40 local governmental agencies that participate in the program. This is made up of 38 counties and two cities. This slide shows a list of activities in a boating safety and enforcement program. Next slide. Listed here are a few of the statistics the division collects from the performance activity report, which is collected annually by the division. These statistics help support the importance and impact of the program and the need for local governmental agencies on our waterways. Next slide. The division provided $11.5 million in funding for fiscal year 18-19 to the participating agencies. In addition, the participating agencies spent county general fund and boat taxes that made up a total of $17 million. The total spent combined between DBW funding and the county funding for this program was over $28 million. This is an increase by approximately $1 million from the last fiscal year. As you can see, the agency's need exceeds the program budget amount. Next slide. The division also participates in events such as Operation Drywater, which is a nationwide event that occurs annually around the 4th of July weekend. The purpose of the event is to raise awareness about the dangers of boating under the influence. Listed also on the slide are additional partners we work closely with. Next slide. And that concludes my presentation. Are there any questions?
Thank you so much, Joanna. At this time, we will open it up for public comment. Is there anyone from the public that would like to address the Boating Accident Reporting Program and the Law Enforcement Financial Aid Program?
Madam Chair, I do not see any hands raised, and there was no one registered to give a comment on this agenda item.
Very well. We'll move on to our commissioners. Do you have any comments or questions of Joanna and the two programs that she just presented on?
I do. The when the boating accident report is collected by the state, is it going to the same database that the locals put it into, or are they collecting it in two different places?
So the accident reporting, we have a database that is currently used by law enforcement, harbor masters, and fire departments. So the ones that we collect from the public are also entered into that database.
So there's no redundancy, correct?
No.
Okay. That's all I was curious about.
Of course.
Any other comments or questions from fellow commissioners? If not, we will move on. Joanna, thank you so much for your great report and great work. Thank you. We will now move on to our next staff report, and that's going to come from Melissa Miranda. Melissa will actually be presenting on four programs, and those include the Boating Safety Course, the California Boater Card Program, the Life Jacket Outreach and Loaner Program, and the Youth Boating Education Program. Melissa.
Melissa, I'm sorry, your microphone is muted, please.
I am so sorry about that. Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. My name is Melissa Miranda, and I'm the manager over the Boating Education and Outreach Unit. Back in September of 2018, the Boating Education and Outreach Unit moved out of the Division of Boating and Waterways and into the Interpretation and Education Division. Even though my team and I are no longer part of the Division of Boating and Waterways, we still support the functions of Boating and Waterways and work very closely with the programs in that division. Like Ramona noted earlier, this change has mutually benefited both divisions, and you'll see positive examples of this later on in my presentation. Our Small But Mighty unit currently consists of four outstanding team members who work together to help oversee the following programs: the California Boater Card Program, Boating Safety Courses, Safe Boating Outreach, Life Jacket Loaner Programs and Trade-Ins, and the Youth Boating Safety Education. Before I go into highlights from our programs over the past year, I want to address how COVID-19 has changed the way that we work. Since mid-March, my team and I have been effectively teleworking or working a hybrid schedule with minimal time in the office. We've been working closely with our contractors to ensure functionality and services remain consistent. We have been working diligently with Parks IT to keep our California Boater Card system functioning smoothly and addressing any problems that arise in a timely manner. We stay in close communication and frequently use Zoom and other video conferencing and telecommunication devices to communicate and keep up our synergy. I want to commend my team for staying the course, continuing to perform at the same top-notch level as prior to the pandemic, and remaining positive through the adversity. The California Boater Card Program began back in 2014 when Governor Edmund G. Brown signed Senate Bill 941 into law. The law prohibits the operators of motorized vessels in California to operate without a valid California boater card. Possession of the card requires operators to take a boating safety education course approved by the National Association of State Boating Law Administrators, or NASLA for short, and the Division of Boating and Waterways, pass the corresponding exam, and apply and pay for the California boater card. This program is being phased in by age, and this year includes boaters 35 years and younger. By 2025, all operators, regardless of age, will be required to carry the card when operating a motorized vessel. This graph shows California boater card activity for the past fiscal year. We received 43,400 applications and issued 33,500 California boater cards. The green bar represents applications submitted, and the blue bar represents cards issued. One of the reasons for the lower numbers of cards issued versus applications submitted is because the applicant may still be completing their education requirement. To date, we have received about 81,000 applications and issued 63,000 cards. This graph overlay shows applications and cards issued in 2018 to give you a visual demonstration of the increase in activity over the past year. The gray bar represents the application submitted, and the red bar represents cards issued. From this graph, you can see that we have seen a significant increase, especially during May and June, likely due to the fact that we began an advertising campaign. We anticipate a large increase in applications for the boater card program over the next few years. A noteworthy highlight for the California boater card program, and like Ramona noted earlier, we received our approval for the first of two regulation packages for the California boater card program back in December of 2019. This first package outlined the cost of the card and describes the temporary and permanent California boater card. A second regulation package that defines the process for applying for the California boater card, division standards for boating safety courses and exams, and an explanation of exemptions has been drafted and is in review. To increase awareness about the California boater card program, we typically participate in boat shows, outdoor shows, and safety fairs. I was happy to hear that a fellow commissioner visited our booth at the Fred Hall Long Beach show, and I'm glad you had a positive interaction there. I'm thankful for our team that goes out and does the hard work in interacting with the public. Due to COVID-19, all events scheduled after March 2020 have been put on hold until further notice. Since the approval of the first regulations package, we have worked with our advertising agency, Uncommon, to begin advertising through our online platforms, including Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We are placing digital advertisements and print ads in boating magazines and publications. We have also, we have marina posters that are placed at launch ramps and boating facilities throughout the state. And a DMV insert was included in the 2019 vessel registration that was sent out to 750,000 boaters. We work closely with our safe boating partners, including local law enforcement, Coast Guard Auxiliary, and the United States Power Squadrons to provide uniform messaging and resources to boaters. Our team reviews boating safety courses from outside vendors for state compliance. We receive courses for review after they have received approval from NASLA. Once approved by both NASLA and the state, the course is then eligible to be listed as an approved course for the California Boater Card Program. Several courses include classroom and hands-on instruction. And in response to COVID, DBW and NASLA partnered to provide temporary authorization for these courses to implement virtual trainings and examinations. There are currently 13 approved courses that meet the education requirements, including the DBW Home Study. I'm sorry, I'm receiving feedback. Are you?
What's going on?
Yeah, I think Tom is. Tom, I'm going to mute your audio for us.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I think we're able to continue.
Thank you. Please continue.
Thank you. So There are 13 approved courses, and DBW has our basic boating safety course that is one of those 13 approved courses. Our DBW home study course is free to the public and can be ordered through our online ordering site. The DBW course may also be viewed online as an ebook option, and an exam packet may be ordered from the Division of Boating and Waterways. The partners such as the Coast Guard Auxiliary, United States Power Squadrons, and Aquatic Centers assist in the distribution of these courses. Over the past year, we distributed 13,500 DBW home study courses and 1,500 exam packets. Our team has been working closely with Parks IT on an online exam option that should be available to the public in the very near future once the internal testing has been finalized. This pie graph shows the most popular courses completed for the California Boater Card compliance. The majority of boaters choose online options, but it's important to note that there are courses to accommodate many different learning styles. Safe Boating Outreach is our opportunity to engage with the public. We work closely with our colleagues and safe boating partners to maximize our reach and to create uniform safety and clean boating messages. In 2019, we participated in 63 event days at boat shows, outdoor shows, county fairs, and the California State Fair. This year, we participated in 13 event days between January and March, including the International Sportsman's Exposition, the San Diego Sun Road Marina Boat Show, and the Long Beach Fred Hall Show. Earlier this year, we were proud to debut our new boating safety simulator that you just saw an image of, hands-on engagement tool that allows us to interact more closely with show attendees. We hope to be able to bring that back once we're able to go back out. Due to COVID-19, in-person events have been canceled for the foreseeable future, but that doesn't mean that we are not engaging with our boaters. We've pivoted our focus to our already established online platforms for the digital engagement strategy. So some of the benefits of this online strategy are that we can reach a greater number of people than just in-person events. And we can also geo-target our audience so that we're reaching boaters in our most critical areas, such as you heard mentioned earlier with our boating accident target areas. This year, we hosted a virtual National Safe Boating Week event that included new and engaging digital content for each day of the National Safe Boating Week on clean and safe boating. We'll continue to create new and original content to keep the boaters engaged through the online platforms throughout this pandemic. This past year, we distributed 450,000 publications. Our online ordering site allows the boating public to order a copy of publications, including our ABCs of California Boating, the DBW Home Study Course, and also the AquaSmart Activity Book. Safe Boating partners may apply for a partner ID, which allows them to order in bulk for distribution on their own. Partners may also reach out to us directly, and we can assist with placing bulk orders for you. We work closely with the DMV to provide ABCs and also carbon monoxide brochures and sticker sets, and then they distribute those to boaters through vessel registrations as well. We use life jackets as an educational tool to help promote safe boating and as an opportunity to teach boaters about proper fit and use. We work closely with safe boating partners, including the United States Army Corps of Engineers, United States Coast Guard Auxiliary, parks, marinas, local law enforcement, fire stations, and other organizations to help distribute life jackets. Over 8,000 life jackets were distributed last year statewide. This included life jackets for life jacket trade-in events, and also supplying life jackets to start new life jacket loan stations and to replenish existing supplies at life jacket loan stations that are already established. So I'd like to highlight two beautiful new life jacket loan stations. This one is a picture of Marshall Gold in Coloma. And then this next one is Santa Cruz Harbor with our partners with the Santa Cruz Port District and Santa Cruz Harbor. We think they did an amazing job, each coming up with our own unique ways of providing those life jackets to boaters. If you see a location that you think would be a good fit for a new life jacket loan station, please do reach out and we'll be happy to help get that started up. Typically, life jacket trade-in events take place during National Safe Boating Week. However, due to COVID-19, life jackets have been provided as requested by partner organizations. We even just provided life jackets for our first drive-through safety event where Safe Kids representatives will distribute the life jackets on our behalf. I've also been working closely with Amy Rigby, who you heard from earlier with the aquatic centers, to ensure that their life jacket needs are met as well. So COVID-19 has changed the way we live and forced us to come up with creative solutions for continuing boating safety programs and messaging. Vivian McCook, who you'll hear from in a minute, and several other colleagues worked in collaboration with me to develop a comprehensive best boating practices document for both boaters and boating facilities. This comprehensive document is easily accessible through DBW and the Boat California pages. We focus heavily on demonstrating proper fit and use of life jackets. But these times have forced us to look at some new ways to engage boaters about their life jackets, and we've come up with this resource you'll see here, the I Love Clean Jacket, to tell people how to clean their life jackets. That's not something we've typically addressed in the past, but due to the current situation, it was fitting. And we also have this resource available on our website, easily accessible through Boat California. So our youth boating safety education, the California Education Code calls on the Division of Boating Waterways to provide elementary age education on safe boating for California students. We accomplished this through our AquaSmart curriculum and supplemental resources. So pictured here is our AquaSmart activity book. This award-winning activity book brings together California-specific water safety lessons, as well as buoyancy and clean boating messaging for grades K through 8 that meets current state curriculum standards. Provided as a free resource at outreach events and to other educators and partners, this is also available to order through our online ordering site. Traditionally, we offer our AquaSmart live puppet and game shows to complement our curriculum to schools throughout California. Our contracted puppeteer company typically performs over 200 live assemblies each year. For the 2019-20 school year, 71 live shows were performed prior to March 2020. As soon as schools began shutting down due to COVID, we quickly began working with our contracted puppeteer company to ensure this resource would be made available online. We were able to pivot from live in-person performances to successfully live streaming our AquaSmart Live puppet and game show on the digital platform in just a few weeks. We live streamed 76 performances for schools between April and June. That was a huge undertaking. And considering our puppeteer company had not even existed on this platform prior to this pandemic, we couldn't have done this without the invaluable expertise of our seasoned ports team that's part of our interpretation and education division. They're already providing distance learning programming prior to the pandemic, and they were able to really assist both our puppeteer company and our unit on getting this turned around and up on the online platform very quickly. So this is just one of the huge examples of, our huge benefit to being part of the Interpretation Education Division. The ports team incorporated our show into their programming also, and they extended our reach even further. We have received a lot of positive feedback, and we plan to continue making this available as an online resource. In addition to offering our assembly online, Vivian Matuk and I collaborated with our fellow ports team members to create a special show that included both safety and clean and green messaging for two virtual events, including Earth Day, that had 2,400 views, and then again for World Oceans Day that had 1,200 views. Our puppeteer company has also worked tirelessly to translate our AquaSmart Live game show, which is an interactive show that provides resources for grades 3 through 5. And so we're gonna be debuting that for this next school year. We were also able to reach several schools in our live streams that are not normally part of our touring schedule due to their isolated locations. So this is a way that we can really engage with a different audience as well. So this also has had a positive effect turning out onto the online platform. All right. My team and I would like to thank our partners, contractors, and fellow parks colleagues for working together with us to help promote safe and clean boating in California. Thank you so much for your time, and we hope you all stay healthy and safe. I'll open it up for questions.
Thank you so much, Melissa. We will now open it up for public comment. If there's anyone from the public wishing to make any comment on Melissa Miranda's presentation on the four program she just presented, and that was the Boating Safety Course, the California Boater Card Program, the Life Jacket Outreach and Loaner Program, or the Youth Boating Education Program.
If anybody would like to make public comment at this time, please raise your hand or press star 9 on your phone. Madam Chair, we don't see anybody raising their hand.
Okay, I will now bring it back to the commission. One of our commissioners, any would have a comment or a question on Melissa's four presentations? Okay. Oh, excellent. Yes, Commissioner Peer.
Melissa, thank you very much for your presentation. My question to you is simply this. In terms of the marketing for the boater card, I have a federally registered vessel. And so I was completely unaware of this boating card that I'm now required to do certain, contingent to certain age requirements and so forth. Do you have any outreach with, so I understand you're doing inserts for California registered vessels. Do you have any outreach with the federal agencies who document vessels who might not otherwise be aware of that program?
I think there's multiple layers to the answer for that question.
Sure, there would be.
I'd like to note that this program is not tied to vessel registration. So although we've, inserted information into the vessel registration, because that's a good way to reach out to boaters, it's operator based. So I understand your viewpoint on the documented vessels. So for our marketing campaign, we've really tried to target in on those that are required to have the card currently. I mentioned in the presentation, we just started a robust advertising for this. We didn't have regulations in place, and so that would be why you probably hadn't heard much about it before. Besides, when people would call on us, we would provide information on it, but we weren't putting information out there like through social media and other online platforms like that. So you're going to start seeing a lot more advertising for the program, especially now that we have those regulations in place. But to answer your question, we're gradually phasing in who we're advertising most closely to. So we put those messages out in a broad sense, but then we also target in on those like this year, 35 and younger.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Yes, Commissioner.
Melissa, I just applaud you with the pivot to virtual engagement for youth and just in the time of COVID, on top of everything that you're doing, and just still elevating that and the importance of that. So just want to thank you and your team for that leadership.
Thank you very much. I'm very proud of both our team and our contractors for just working so hard. And I mean, we put that out in a few short weeks, and we're just really proud of the product and honestly just extending the reach as well. So it forced us to get onto the online platform, and that is a good place to be as well. So I know they look forward to a time when we can get back out into schools, but for now we're going to safely do it from, there. You saw the image of the garage studio. So thank you.
I just have a couple of comments and maybe a question as well, Melissa. So given this incredibly different time that we're living with distance learning and this incredible program that you are offering right now, I'm curious to see if we're, because I personally have some schools that I would love to put you in touch with. But I guess my question is, do we interact at all with the California School Administrators Association? And again, given this distant learning time, maybe there might be an increase and an uptick in wanting more of this in their curriculum. Again, it's such a different time right now. And I'm thinking here locally in my local school district, and being so close to the river, maybe this is a unique opportunity to enhance, again, this program and the unique offerings that we have. So that it's kind of a double-edged question for you.
Okay, thank you for the question. So currently we use a list provided by the CDE, California Department of Education. It's available on their website. So we reach out. We actually just started using email. Those just became available, which is amazing. Before we were doing a mailer. And so there's a certain amount of cost savings there as well, being able to do an email campaign out. We typically reach the high boating accident target areas. So those most critical areas that have the higher accidents. So we reach out to those typically when we were going out physically to the schools. But we're always looking at new ways to reach out to schools and get them to engage back with us. We have a lot of schools that know us and participate with us on an annual basis. And so, you know, we're always looking for more people. If you have recommendations, please send them our way and we can get them hooked up with our puppeteer, you know, no problem. And if you have information on that resource that you mentioned, I'd love to take a look at it and see how we can implement that into reaching out to these schools as well.
Absolutely. We'll definitely do that.
I'd also like to mention our ports team. They already have an amazing established online distance learning platform. And so we're working really closely with them to see this school year, how we can work together to reach out that way as well. It was the end of the school year last year. So we were able to get in on some of their home learning programs toward the end of the school year. And then this year we're going to work on a program together with them so that we can create a uniform platform.
Excellent. Thank you so much for all your great work. Appreciate that. Okay, we will move on to our, I think it looks like our last item on our staff reports, and that is with Vivian, is it Maddock? Vivian, I'm sorry. And she will be presenting on both the dock worker program as well as the boating clean and green program. Vivian.
Yes. Good morning, commissioners. Let me just take over here the screen. Okay. Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
My name is Vivian Matuk. I'm the Environmental Boating Program Manager for both the California State Parks and the California Coastal Commission. I manage the California Boating Clean and Green Program, which is a program shared between the two agencies, which is a great example of how two agencies can work together. My program is mainly funded by the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund with an annual program implementation budget of $100,000. The Coastal Commission contributes to $30,000 to the program, and my program is part of the Interpretation and Education Division. And I'm very excited to present to you the accomplishments and highlights for my program in the last past year. The Boating Clean and Green program is a statewide boater education and technical assistance program, which main objectives are to educate boaters about environmentally sound boating practices and to assist marinas and local governments in identifying the need for and in installing pollution prevention services for boaters. We have four main components, which are education and outreach, research, networking, and technical assistance. In terms of education and outreach, we continue with our dock walker program. Dock walkers are partners trained by our program and our program partners to share clean boating information with the boating community. In other words, they are environmental educators. These partners become dock walkers by attending one of our trainings we offer throughout the state. Last year, we conducted 13, where we work with 200 partner dock walkers. During the training, we learn about potential sources of boat pollution, federal and state laws, and best management practices we can share with the boating community so we can support their clean and green activities. Once these partners are trained, then they go out and meet boaters wherever they are, including marinas, boat shows and boating events, fishing events, among others. They talk to boaters about clean and safe boating information and distribute our main outreach tool, which is the California Boater Kit that you can see in this slide, which was provided designed based on research and input provided by our advisory group comprised of members with the marina industry and boating associations, in other words, the experts. This comprehensive packet of clean and safe boating information contains, as you can see here, some pollution prevention tools like this oil absorbent pillow, this fuel bib, this oil absorbent sheet, as well as other clean and safe boating information. Our partner dock walkers talk to the boaters, share with them how to use these items, how to properly dispose of them. Last year, we were able to produce and distribute across the state over 7,800 boater kits. This particular map shows where boaters live who have learned about clean boating information and our partners, dock walkers, as well as a staff in 2019. As you can see, it's a very geographically diverse map that we're able to put together utilizing some of the data that we collect via the Boater Kit questionnaire that Boater Kit recipients need to fill out as part of our education and outreach. Our program is implemented with many, many organizations. As you can see in this slide, we work really closely with the Coast Guard Auxiliary, as well as the Power Squadrons, the Bay Foundation, San Francisco Estuary Partnership, Save Our Shores, many local government, as well as Marina Boating Association, among others. Challenges bring new opportunities, and we all know that COVID force us to adapt to the new situation. So back in March, we had to redesign the in-person trainings and develop virtual trainings. This year, we were able to conduct back in March 3 in-person dock walker training, and after that, 10 virtual webinars or trainings for our partner dock walkers. We were able to work with 187 participants. And after each of the webinars, we asked for an evaluation form and they were rated excellent. So we're very excited that we were able to pivot for COVID in this direction and continue to implement the program responsibly. Last year, we were able to attend 2 boat shows and conduct 6 clean boating seminars, which all together reached out over 1,000 boaters. These provide great opportunities for us to reach out to the boating community. Again, this year, due to COVID-19, we were creative. And as you heard my colleague, Melissa Miranda, we work with her unit, as well as our ports program colleagues and our marketing company. And we put together 2 campaigns for Earth Week and World Oceans Day to engage, to generate more social engagement about clean and safe boating information. Via these 2 campaigns, we were able to generate over 360,000 impressions and more than 36,000 engagements. So we're very excited that we're reaching out, being creative, and using new resources to continue to support the clean boating information across the state. In addition, instead of offering clean boating seminars at marinas or yacht clubs, we transition into offering clean boating webinars. The first one we conducted was last July with 19 participants, and we're going to be offering more for both Northern and Southern California throughout the rest of the year. Last year, we continued with our online team voting quiz from July to September, and actually right now we're implementing it as well. This particular tool was designed to be able to reach out to those voters we don't necessarily see via our dog walker partners or our presentations or our outreach and education events. This particular tool, the goal is to raise clean voting information across the state. Last year, we had 2,400 quiz completions, and I wanted to share with you some of the feedback we received from our voters. As you can see in the first and bottom feedback, even those voters who have been voting for several years said that they learned from our quiz, and they were very excited to see that we were thinking outside of the box. And I want to share with you that we're very excited about the fact that last year we received a national award for this particular educational tool provided by the International Boating Water Safety Summit, recognizing creativity in communicating with the boating public about clean and safe boating practices. We also continue with the California Fishing Line Recycling Program. Since 2011, we have been installing fishing line recycling stations like the one you see on the left corner or the left side of your screen. These stations have been placed in the areas with the highest fishing activity. Last year alone, we installed 19 stations that look like that one, for a total of 290 fishing line recycling stations across the state. Thanks to this effort, we have been able to collect and properly recycle more than 1,800 pounds of fishing line. If you stretch that line, it will stretch from San Francisco to La Pintada, Panama. So hopefully next year, when I come back to give you my annual report, we will be able to reach to my home country, Colombia. We're almost there. This particular recycle line, so you have an idea, is used to produce new materials, such as fishing boxes and fishing spools. So we are generating a great program there because we are recycling an item that can have many, many more lives in different other products. In terms of technical assistance, as I mentioned to you before, is another component of our program. We continue working with the Governor's Office of Emergency Services, as well as the Office of Spill Prevention and Response, putting together workshops for boating facilities, in this particular case, to promote the Marinas and Yacht Club Spill Response Communication Packet that contains needed information in case of a spill inside or outside their facilities. Last year, we conducted 4 workshops with 100 participants. And this year, the governor's office, as well as OSPR, accepted my challenge to transition into a virtual workshop. And we will be conducting in the next few months 2 workshops for Northern and Southern California, again, for our boating facility operators, as well as their staff. In order to prevent the spread of invasive species, we also work or continue to work with our colleagues with the Division of Boating and Waterways, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services, and the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, offering educational workshops. Last year, we conducted 2, and they also accepted the challenge. And this year, we're going to be offering 2 workshops about this particular topic. As my colleague Melissa Miranda mentioned, we work together with other managers as well, developing 2 documents with best management practices for boating facilities as well as boaters for COVID-19, keeping in mind, of course, state and federal guidelines, and you can find this information in our website. Another program that I'm excited to report to you is the annual Costa Cleanup Day. I'm going to start first giving you the recap from last year and then a little explanation on how this program is going to work this year, considering, again, the limitations we have with COVID. This program is managed by the Coastal Commission. It's the largest volunteer event in the entire state, actually in the entire nation. Last year, we worked with 70 boating facilities and boating groups across the state. We had 265 vessels on the water, We work with 2,000, over 2,000 volunteers who help us collecting and removing from the waterways and shorelands, among others, more than 23,000 pounds of trash and recyclables. So that's fantastic. These slides that I'm showing you right now give you the numbers for the total statewide count. This year, for obvious reasons, instead of having a centralized one-day event, which always happens the third Saturday in September, the commission came up with a very creative approach, which is let's have the entire month of September to be Coastal Cleanup Month. So anybody, and I want to invite all the members of the public and you commissioners, can open your door and even go around your block and clean up your block, your neighborhood, or your near park. Of course, keeping in mind the local and state recommendations to be part of these events. So it's a beautiful way of continuing with the program, even with these limitations. In addition, I also work with two of our colleagues, Karen Deal, as well as Debbie Holmes, managing the California Clean Vessel Act Education and Outreach Program. This finalizes my presentation, and I'm happy to take any questions. Thank you for this opportunity.
Vivian, thank you so much for that presentation. At this time, I'd like to open it up for members of the public to ask any questions of your presentation, both on the Dock Walker program as well as the Boat Clean and Green program. Are there any members of the public who would like to ask a question at this time?
At this time, Madam Chair, there's nobody with their hands raised. If anybody would care to raise their hand or hit star 9 if they're on the phone, we can put you in the queue. And it doesn't appear that anybody's wanting to talk at this time.
Great. Thank you, Bob. Okay, we will bring it to the commission. Are there any commissioners who wish to ask any questions or make a comment on Vivian's two presentations? Commissioners. Okay, seeing none. Vivian, thank you so much for your excellent presentation, and also want to congratulate you and your team for your international award. Well-deserved, might I say. And again,
thank you so much.
Absolutely. And let's see if we can get to your native country of Colombia with this program.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we will move on now to the public comment period for non-agenda items. At this time, we will hear public comments on items not on the agenda. Each member of the public will have 3 minutes to make his or her comment. After hearing all public comments, we will continue the meeting with agenda item 10 and our administrative items. At this time, if there are any members of the public who wish to make a comment again on an item not on the agenda.
Madam Chair, we have one person.
Okay.
Yes, we actually have two. I don't know if the other person is on. He registered to make a comment. Ted Chiffone, if he's calling in, please hit star 9 to raise your hand. Ted Chiffone.
Yeah, I don't see a Ted on here.
Okay.
But I see a Jerry Desmond.
Yes, he is next up.
Okay, Jerry, you are alive.
Hello, live again. Hello, commissioners. My name is Jerry Desmond. Some of you new commissioners may not know me or the organization I'm here on behalf of. It's the Recreational Boaters of California, often referred to as RBOC. To note, RBOC in California's boating community, comprised of voters.
We're on public comment, and I'm not doing my thing. Did we lose them?
Hello?
Oh, sorry.
Nope, we're good.
Did you hear all that?
We did, Jerry. Continue.
Good. I'll keep going. Sorry about that. RBOC in California's boating community, comprised of boaters and the boating industry, and is represented by our individual organizations, are extremely supportive of the Division of Boating and Waterways and the programs and services that it provides and the work you all do. This includes a number of activities over the past several decades. I'm here to talk today about the concerns that we started to hear and we had in the spring of this year
that state parks might be moving forward in advance of the next budget, you know, that started on July 1, with one or more proposals to revise the revolving fund in a process and with substantive provisions that could be detrimental to the state's boating community and all those that you all serve. We were informed that there was a deficiency or imbalance in the fund. Revisions were being considered for the programs and services, as well as perhaps the fees and sources of payments into the fund. Even just today in this commission meeting, the departments confirmed that it identified sufficient revenues and savings that precluded the need to address the fund in the current fiscal year. It also informed the commission that the long-term stability of the fund may be addressed in the next couple months when the governor's proposed budget comes out in January for the next fiscal year. And then the commission was just informed that one program has moved out of the division and one program has returned. RBOC submits that this commission, in a leadership role and with helpful public engagement, remains essential on these and other issues. In the past, it's led to the development of several initiatives that continue to benefit boaters today. And going forward, starting today, this can enable the initiatives that you are all identifying today, such as safe and easy access to the water for our communities, to be accomplished. But there needs to be a commission that leads and is very active, and we entreat you to do so. For this to occur, we must have accurate information, and you must have accurate information and meaningful engagement. That may sound obvious. However, past commission meetings, public input, commissioner questions have not been fruitful, and it led 13 of our organizations to submit a letter on May 4th to state parks raising these issues and asking to be involved. We encourage you to look at the issues raised in our letter, to engage in a leadership role. The future opportunities are there, and we think you are the best people to do it. We're pleased the governor has appointed the new commissioners to take action, and we look forward to working with you and appreciate all that you do. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. Truly appreciate your comments, your thoughts. And again, I think that this is really important for us to hear from RBOC. And again, as we move forward, working with you as a strategic partner and an ally. So again, comments well taken. Appreciate that. I am formally closing public comment now, if there are no other public comments.
No, Madam Chair, there are nobody else in the queue.
Okay. Okay, so we will formally close public comment at this time, and we will move on to our administrative items, which are administrative items. I guess we're going to look at suggested agenda items for the next meeting. Do we have dates set for our next agenda meeting? And I'm guessing, given the circumstances that we're facing right now, it will be another Zoom meeting. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair, this is Ramona. Yes, that is correct. As of today, it does appear that we'll be doing another virtual commission meeting, and that date is November 19th.
So a couple of suggestions and a couple of thoughts, and I'd love to hear from my peers on the commission. Given that there's been a lot of discussion today with regard to the revolving fund, and I guess the stability or instability of the fund, I think that's got to be one of our agenda items, is to get a complete update on budget. And we definitely need to get an update on that. I don't know how the rest of the commission feels, and especially with our two newest commissioners, we usually would do a tour date for projects that we were funding. And again, given that we're operating under different circumstances, I don't know if that's still a possibility, or perhaps we could still participate in the tour part and do the meeting virtually. I don't know if that's something that we can still consider. Again, I get tremendous value in being able to actually go to the sites themselves, be able to engage and interact with those who are submitting for funding. so that we can kind of get a lay of the land, you know, how significant, you know, these projects are for those communities that we are funding. So I don't know if that's a consideration that we can take on for the future. I'll put that out there for both legal and our deputy director, Fernandez.
So what we'll need to look at, obviously, is to see where the location and the project site, also local ordinances in that county. But also there is a, I believe it's a budget letter that we're also under as far as travel for discretionary, non-discretionary. So we'll have to look at all of those, whether it's a budget letter, executive order in place, to see whether we are able to travel. That'll be one of the main things.
Absolutely.
Did I miss anything there, Catherine? No.
Catherine, any additional thoughts on that?
No, I think that's correct. I somewhat doubt that we're traveling right now. It'll be hard to tell, you know, whether the counties are, you know, under a no travel order, and it's going to float around so much. So I would say that we will endeavor to try to do that, but that it's maybe unlikely until spring.
Yeah,
got it. Okay, thank you. Point well taken. Any other suggested agenda items from any of the commissioners? Vice Chair Pettibone, any thoughts?
Yeah, I would love to have the voting needs assessment on there. I think we're overdue on that, quite a bit overdue. So it'd be good to get that on the agenda.
Yeah,
and then
noted.
Separately and apart, I haven't seen that letter that was referenced by Jerry Desmond, and I'd love to, I'm sure all the commissioners would like to see a copy of that letter. So if you could circulate it, that'd be great.
Okay. I believe it was addressed to the director, but yes, I'll see whether we can share that.
That would be great. Thank you, Commissioner Pettibone, for bringing that up, because it's on my notes. If we could get a copy of that May 4th letter, I think would provide good insight for all of us. So I think we should, if we can, get a copy of that for everybody. Okay. If no other items, can I get a motion?
I'd like to have one, if Madam Chair, if you don't mind.
Absolutely, Commissioner Peer.
And my every time I talk, my iPad crashes. So I'm, for whatever reason, so I'll do it quickly. I appreciate the comments of the representative for the environmental issues. And I don't know if this is an agenda item, but I have accessed the DBW website for very, what I would call, fundamental things, such as bilge cleaning, which I think are very important to maintaining, you know, the clarity of the waterways and so forth. And I did not feel that particular, all those vendors that are listed on there is updated. So if we could ask, I'm sorry, I forgot her name. If she could maybe just do a little more of a presentation on who those vendors are for environmental remediation aspects of boating, oil change, bilge cleaning, all of these various things. I think that would be very helpful for the general public to be able to access that off of the DBW website. And maybe it's current, maybe it isn't. I just don't know. I was not able to get a lot of help from that website when I tried to access it. So that would be my recommendation for an additional agenda item.
Wonderful. And Vivian, I believe that was directed at you. I'm guessing you're still on and you've got that. If not, Ramona can.
Yeah, I'm still here. I can answer that question, Commissioner Peer. Thank you so much. So basically, we have in our website educational resources such as maps that connect the boaters to, for example, where the bilge pump out systems are in California. California has 13 of those, and they are listed, for example, in our educational materials and also in our website. So those are the sludge pump out at the actual marinas, as well as the sewage pump outs, because DBW is the recipient of the federal grant to set up sewage pump out stations. We have also that. We have resources for oil absorbent exchange program. We also have an additional list that is what we call mobile boat-to-boat services. In other words, services that boaters can hire. So instead of, for example, Commissioner Peer, if you don't want to bring your boat to, let's say, San Francisco Marina to empty your holding tank, there are mobile companies that can come to you to do that for a fee. So what we mainly do is to connect the boaters to services at marinas and list some of the mobile services, but we don't have, for example, a specific list of vendors for other stuff, because, you know, it's kind of tricky for us to endorse, you know, particular vendors. We just try to engage the boating community on resources at the marinas. Also, list the mobile services, as I mentioned to you before, and that information is found in our website, and also the maps. So if you want, I can send you one of our clean boating maps so you can see it, which is at boat shows, boating events, and also order through the online system that my colleague Melissa Miranda explained to all of us.
Yes. Vivian, I appreciate that. Thank you. I guess what I'm trying to understand, and we're talking about future agenda items, is what I would like to have in November, if, of course, the permission of the Madam Chair, that this gets on the agenda, just get a really clear sense of, like, those individual vendors who provide services and sort of how up to date that list is and sort of what our outreach is to them, in terms of getting, you know, them engaged with the DBW.
Yep, we lost them.
Oh, no.
Yeah, okay. I'll be happy just to try to understand a little bit more the question and his request. We don't promote particular vendors for example, oil absorbents. That's done by the Office of Spill Prevention and Response, because it's not part of the DBW division mission. We have the Office of Spill Prevention and Response, and they have a very strict protocol that they implement in partnership with the Coast Guard to identify what spill materials can be used on the waters of California, which are mainly inert materials, oil absorbents, among others. But it would be interesting to understand the specific question so we can assist.
Yeah.
With respect to that.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you, Vivian. Mm-hmm. Okay, I just want to have a couple of concluding remarks. I just want to thank again all of the staff of DBW, our park staff, to our legal counsel, Catherine Tobias, and of course to the public. We absolutely appreciate you joining us and giving us your insight, your thoughts, and your comments, and to our great technicians who kept us on track. These, again, are very unique circumstances that we are working on, and I'm so appreciative of everybody's patience. And again, want to re-welcome and congratulate both Commissioners Peer and Commissioner Hawkins for your appointments by the governor. We again welcome you and very excited to work with both of you moving forward. And with that, I will ask for a motion to adjourn this meeting.
I'll make the motion to adjourn.
Motion by Commissioner Ehrman. Is there a second?
Tom Peer seconds.
There he is. Great. And a second by our newest commissioner, Commissioner Peer. And with that, I don't believe we need a roll call. Is that correct? Okay. No. Thank you, everybody. Have a great rest of your day and be safe. And we'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Hi, everyone. Thank you. Peace.